Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I hope your Thanksgiving Day went well. The holiday that brings together family, food, and football is a tradition in the United States that your average history book will tell you is older than this country itself. Pilgrims, Indians, sharing food, harvests, yada yada. We'll fast forward hundreds of years and guess what we're doing this week. Police are shooting rubber bullets, tear gas, and shooting water in sub-freezing temperatures onto members of the Sioux Nation and others who are peacefully protesting an oil pipeline planned to be built on their land. They think it'll affect the water supply, which is obviously vital to life. So, if you're just waking up from a nap having gorged yourself on all the spoils of America, don't forget where this all started, particularly compared to where we are today, intimidating and attacking the very people that made this land the place to be to begin with, because they were already here. I'm Clinton Yates, and that's my take.
Because the same people that try to blackball me forgot about two things, my black balls.
I was on a show here at the Young Turks yesterday, people on the panel asking me, why do you think Barack Obama isn't doing anything? Why do you think that is? I don't know. When the fuck did Barack Obama ever do anything? When did he ever? Remember when he prosecuted those bankers? Neither do I. Remember when he prosecuted those people who committed war crime? Neither do I. Neither do I. You know, go
remember
ahead.
When he put on his comfortable walking shoes to stand in line with the unions? Remember that?
Oh, in Wisconsin, when
yeah.
they took the unions away from the teachers?
Remember that's right.
He said he would stand with them? No, he didn't do that either. When has Barack ever stood up for anybody except his donors? Right now, he's full-throatedly still trying to push the TPP. So there you go. When it comes to speaking up for his donors, Barack Obama is right there. And this is why it's good that Barack Obama is leaving, because he puts half the left to sleep. Right now, Barack Obama is handing over enhanced interrogation. He's handing over enhanced interrogation. He's handing over no habeas corpus. He's handing over a surveillance state, which, by the way, is going to expand come December 1st, even more under Obama. And a lot of people inside the justice community are like, hey, why are you guys doing this? That's another story. But I'm talking about how it's even getting worse. The surveillance state is getting worse, where the government abuse of peaceful protesters is getting worse. And it's all happening under Obama. And Obama puts everybody to sleep. So now Obama's going to leave, and people are already pre-pissed off at Donald Trump about this stuff. So, again, the idea that Barack Obama is somehow a good guy and he cares about the country is bullshit. He cares about his donors. That's the way his gears work. And this isn't hyperbole. He's not doing a goddamn thing right now. They just blew a woman's arm off up in North Dakota, a peaceful woman who was bringing water to people who were praying, and they blew her arm off. And Barack Obama's going to let it play out for a few weeks. Hey, Barack, how about we put some fire ants in your underwear and let it play out for a few weeks?
My black balls.
Let's just do that. How about we put you out in North Dakota in sub-freezing temperatures and we spray you and your kids with water?
Yeah, again, I'm frustrated by the so-called left, by the so-called progressives, who are now wrapped up in self-pity because we're going to have Donald Trump as our president. Every day I get emails from my friends, you know, just proclaiming their outrage and frustration and fear that Donald Trump will be our next president. I ask them, where is your outrage and your disgust for what's happening in Standing Rock? It's happening right now. It's not something theoretical in the future that might or might not happen. It's happening right now. It's been going on for a while. And people are suffering. I mean, they are They're getting their dignity stripped away from them. They're being beaten down and, you know, tortured. I mean, that's torture. You're right. That's torture. When you spray people with ice-cold water in sub-freezing temperatures, that is torture. That's torture. And our government is doing it to peaceful U.S. citizens. If that doesn't bother you, I mean, what's going to bother you then? Well, what do you care about? You care about, you know, Jeff Sessions and Steve Bannon and all these people that are going to be in power, like, months from now because they don't align with your political ideology. But you're not upset by what's happening right now under your president that you voted for that should be accountable to you? That's so strange to me. I don't understand people who aren't bothered, who aren't shocked and frustrated by Barack Obama's lack of leadership and lack of action in North Dakota. To me, I'm appalled by it. I mean, at the same time, you know, these friends of mine are sending me these emails, you know, about the horror they feel about Trump's presidency.
There's horror happening right now.
There's horror happening right now. They're also sending emails saying things like, oh, I'm going to miss Barack Obama. He's such an amazing president. He was so good. Too bad he can't serve a third term. Now, so I'm not as harsh against Barack as you are. I mean, I don't think he's done some couple of good things. But look, he has not been a champion of progressive rights.
He's why we have Trump.
Yeah, he is the establishment.
He's why. Right? You know why Hillary Clinton lost in Wisconsin and Michigan? Because A, she passed NAFTA, and B, when she was trying to come ask those people for their votes again, Barack Obama, the leader of the party, the Democrat, was pushing the TPP, and they knew it. Like, nobody went to him like, hey, you better fucking stop this because you guys are going to lose the election. Nobody said that to him. I said it. I said it all along. Like, how are these people going to vote for them when they know you're sending your vote? Because they weren't going after those people's votes. They were going after the Republican votes anyway. And that's why, you want to know why the Democrats lost to Trump? Because the Democrats stand for nothing. How do you lose to a clown? Because the Democrats are clowns. Barack Obama is a clown who stands for nothing. Well, nothing. If he stood for anything, if he stood for human beings, human rights, he would be out there in North Dakota like Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders gets it. He's screaming at the top of his lungs about this. Barack Obama's put to sleep. And they say I was the Obama
nation of Obama's nation. And a lot of people have been paying Donald Trump a visit at Trump Tower in New York City, mostly people being considered for jobs in the new administration. But one meeting stands out. Navy Admiral Mike Rogers sat down with Trump. He is head of the National Security Agency. He's in the military chain of command, and it appears he never told the current commander-in-chief he was doing this. Author and columnist James Bamford writes about the intelligence community and says it is hard to underestimate the role Rogers plays.
Well, he has the most important job basically in history in terms of intelligence.
But many feel Rogers has not done the best job at NSA. Documents and spy tools have been stolen, and he's come under criticism for not stemming the influence of terrorist groups online.
The administration was not overly happy with his work deterring ISIS.
Nevertheless, Bamford says Trump could be considering Rogers to be his next director of national intelligence.
Was it appropriate for someone who is within the military chain of command to meet with the incoming president without telling the current commander-in-chief?
I don't know what the rules are, but it certainly is unethical, I would think, to quietly sneak off to New York and meet with an incoming administration without even having the courtesy of telling them that you're going to do it.
Damn you, Obama.
Might that tell us something about tensions that exist between Mike Rogers and President Obama?
I've never seen that there's really that much in terms of tensions. I think there was disappointment in his tenure, and they were about to fire him. You know, there are two things that he could have gone up to New York for. One was to see if he could keep his current job, and the second thing would be to take the director of national intelligence. Those were really the only two options he had open to him.
It sounds like, though, that his firing might have been something that was very much underway. You're saying that this meeting with Trump is not something that really precipitated or sped up the process in President Obama's mind?
No, from what I understand, his head was on the chopping block before the election.
Why would Donald Trump want someone in his administration who is viewed as failing in many ways during his tenure?
It's an interesting question. I don't know. He'd have to see who else is out there. The real odd situation is the fact that Admiral Rogers has come out recently and said that he was convinced that it was Russia that launched the DNC attacks. So that goes completely opposite to what the Trump people have been saying.
Downplaying Russia's involvement, yeah.
Right. He's been saying that there isn't that much evidence and so forth. So So that would make for an interesting conversation during that time in New York.
This could be passed off as sort of an internal Washington power struggle, but sounds like there's a lot at stake here.
Well, there's a tremendous amount at stake because I think this is where things are going to happen. It's going to happen with cyber, I think, under a Trump administration. I mean, he's come out and said he doesn't want to put boots on the ground in the Middle East. But what he did was he put General Flynn in as his national security advisor.
Mike Flynn, yeah, the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Exactly. And General Flynn, when he was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, he was very adamant on increasing enormously the manpower of intelligence. It would be double what they had. And it would have been basically competition with the CIA, and that's one of the reasons he was fired.
Well, that points to a real question then of what we expect from Donald Trump. I mean, we learned so much from the Edward Snowden situation about the NSA and its power to collect information about people around the world and also within the United States. I mean, what will a President Donald Trump mean for those kinds of programs?
Well, a lot of the restrictions that have been placed on the U.S. use of NSA were executive orders, and they could be just overturned with the use of a pen.
So this could be Mike Rogers perhaps going and saying, hey, President-elect Trump, I'm in that group. I'm on board with you.
Oh, exactly, yeah. That's why NSA and Cyber Command, both under the same person, are going to be enormously important players in the Trump administration.
Okay. James Bamford is a columnist for Foreign Policy, and he's the author of The Shadow Factory, The Ultra-Secret NSA from 9/11 to the Eavesdropping on America. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure, Dave. How we stop the Black Panthers.
Ronald Reagan cooked up an answer. President-elect Donald Trump just told the New York Times that he disavows a white supremacist group that's using his name to push its racist ideology. This comes after calls grew louder and louder for Trump to strongly condemn this meeting over the weekend of hundreds of white nationalists. They gathered in Washington, D.C. at the Reagan Building. This is just a couple of blocks from the White House. You hear the cheers to cheer on Trump's victory with a Nazi salute.
America was, until this past generation, a white country designed for ourselves and our posterity. It is our creation. It is our inheritance, and it belongs to us. Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
Let's bring in CNN political commentator and Trump supporter Paris Denard. Also, Charles Kaiser is with us. He's a CNN.com contributor and the author of multiple books, including The Cost of Courage, the story of how one French family fought the Nazis during the Paris occupation. Gentlemen, welcome. And
thank you.
Charles, let me just begin with you. I mean, now that you're hearing, we're getting some of the information coming out of this New York Times meeting that Trump has disavowed this particular group. Is that enough for you?
Well, I'm delighted that my Mr. Trump has visited my alma mater at the New York Times and said that he doesn't want to do this anymore, but I want to give him a little advice for the future if he does not want to stimulate the alt-right. First thing, he should never retweet someone with the name White Genocide who lists his address as Jew America. That's what he did in February. He should never ask his supporters again to give the Nazi salute, which he did at a rally in March. That's not a good idea. In July, I think it was a mistake.
Wait, when
to
did
retreat
he say that?
In March, he asked his supporters to raise and pledge their support to his candidacy and promise to vote for him.
Okay.
There's plenty of video of that. You can find that. And then, of course, in July, he retweeted an image of his opponent with the six-pointed Jewish star on it. I thought that was a mistake. But we have bigger problems here. Also in July, you know, he selected as his vice president the most homophobic man in American public life, a person who believes that gay people actually do not have the right to exist. And then, you know, if you don't want to support the alt-right, don't choose as a White House counselor a man who uses the word nigger, whose wife says that he did not want his daughters to go to a school with too many Jews, And don't choose as an attorney general a man who calls the NAACP an un-American organization and who we learned in The Guardian today went so far as to prosecute
Charles,
two of the
just
people.
Hang on a second. I appreciate you going through all of this, but please don't use the N-word on my show.
I'm sorry. Well, I never use
Thank
the N-word except when I'm quoting someone who's been appointed by the president to serve in the Oval Office, since this is such a disgusting moment in our history.
Let me go back to my original question. Currently, the fact that Mr. Trump has disavowed this group, is that enough?
Well, you know, if actions speak louder than words, and all of his actions have been things that encouraged groups like these by appointing Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, by appointing Bannon as a White House counselor. You can't do one thing and then expect the other to happen. And just peering into the camera on 60 Minutes and saying, don't do it, doesn't seem to be very effective.
The more I've sat here and listened to the fact that somebody used the N-word on this show, it is not okay. It is not okay, Charles Kaiser. I respect you. I enjoy having you on as a guest, but not okay. By the way, the claim that Mr. Bannon used the N-word, I've never heard of this. So there's that. Take a break.
Even when I'm in my Benz, I'm still a nigga.
Nigga!
Donald Trump's election victory has left many people concerned about the future of race relations in the U.S. One group that's been associated with his campaign is a white nationalist movement known as the alt-right. And this weekend, they met in Washington, D.C. to talk about what they see as a new awakening for their cause. They feel emboldened by Mr. Trump's victory and hope their ideas will help to shape his presidency. But outside their meeting, hundreds of people gathered to protest at a movement they see as racist and fascist, as Aline McBool reports.
Well, this protest outside this building, very close to the White House, in fact, is because of an alt-right conference that's going on here. We've already seen it get very heated indeed. When one member of the alt-right decided to go into the crowd of protesters, he was met with hostility, a fight started, and he was left with a gash on his forehead.
They started calling us Nazis, which is incorrect because I'm not a racist. I'm a very tolerant person.
So what is the alt-right? Well, it includes white nationalists, white supremacists, anti-Semites, Islamophobes. It's openly racist, and there are those who feel that alt-right is essentially code for neo-Nazi. A few months ago, we met the man who coined that phrase and who's leading this conference.
Well, we want to expand white privilege and deepen it. I do care about my people more than I care about other people, just like you would care about your family more than you care about other children.
Now, he has got a lot to talk about at this conference. His social media accounts were closed over the last week because of hate speech, but he'll also be celebrating because the man he wanted in the White House is going to be there, and he will be pleased already with the appointments that Donald Trump has made.
Donald Trump's campaign was the first step towards identity politics in the United States.
In his speech to a crowd of a couple of hundred supporters, many with a distinctive shaved back and sides haircut, Richard Spencer talked of how the alt-right had helped shape Donald Trump, the candidate, and would guide him now as president.
I think moving forward, the alt-right can, as an intellectual vanguard, can complete Trump. I do think that we have, a psychic connection or a deeper connection with Donald Trump in a way that we simply do not have with most all Republicans.
Many in the room told me of their excitement at a Donald Trump presidency.
This is the first time in a very long time I've been interested in mainstream politics.
Because someone was talking your language.
Someone was touching on something very real.
And have you been pleased so far with the way Donald Trump appears to be going with his appointments?
Yes, actually. If I was Donald Trump's political advisor and I was trying to line people up, then he's appointing the right people.
But can you understand why Muslim Americans, for example, why African Americans might be concerned, might be worried now?
Well, what about us? Can they understand why we might be concerned? that we are being replaced and being forced to become minorities in our own countries? Yes. This is a massive replacement, ongoing.
Well, I've spent a lifetime fighting for these causes since I was a teenager. I've always felt that a homogeneous state is a happier state.
Just imagine by accident of birth that you had been born African-American. Would you feel concerned now? Would you feel worried about a Trump presidency?
No. If I were African-American, I hope I would feel the way I feel now, but I would dedicate myself to improving my people and to living with my people. And I would have no trouble with white people who wanted to live with white people. And I think all these talks about Muslims and blacks and others being frightened and all that, this is just neurotic nonsense. We're the ones that are being attacked.
No Donald Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA.
Outside, the protests continued.
It makes me really sad. I didn't realize those people existed in the numbers.
What do you say to those people who say he's not even in the White House yet? Give him a chance.
I feel like the chance kind of already happened, and then he's made some appointments who don't really, I feel like, represent the U.S. We're all from different places, and we really need to fight against what's happening.
That report from Washington, D.C. was by Aleem Makbul.
The first thing we're going to do to, I think, stop racism is stop focusing on racism.
Stop focusing on racism.
George Soros has pledged a whopping $10 million to fight hate crimes in the United States. Now, this was a response to the increased number of hate crimes following the election of Donald Trump. The FBI has reported last week that there was an increase of nearly 67% last year in hate crimes against Muslim Americans and an increase of 6% against all groups. So there was already an uptick, but the number kind of exploded after Donald Trump was elected. So between the election and Friday, the Southern Poverty Law Center received more than 700 reports of harassment and possible hate crimes. So George Soros sees all this and he realizes it's a problem. And so he's decided to spend a considerable amount of money to combat it. Soros's nonprofit, the Open Society Foundations, plans to spend at least $5 million in coming weeks to fund grants of as much as $150,000 to community groups and civil rights organizations to develop plans for combating the recent spate of hate crimes and to work with victims. Now, the rest of the money is going to go toward tracking and reporting these hate crimes, because even the FBI is saying that there are some inconsistencies. It's kind of a flawed system. And so George Soros wants to improve that. And I think it's important to do all this. I think it's important to protect people against possible hate crimes. We are seeing an uptick, and I do think it has something to do with the rhetoric of Trump and his campaign. But interestingly enough, George Soros is like, this is not a political statement. I'm not trying to make a political statement. Right. But it is a political statement, and that's okay. Another thing that I found really interesting about this is, you know, the demonization of George Soros. And so a lot of conservatives will attack their opponents by saying that they're funded by George Soros. We're accused of being funded by George Soros, which I think is hilarious because we kind of want to be, but we're not. Right. So like, if we were, it's not like something we'd hide. We'd like openly accept it and we'd be like, awesome, we got funding from George Soros. There's nothing wrong with that. But one of the criticisms that a lot of Republicans have is that George Soros is too influential with his money in our current modern-day political system. But you also have the Koch brothers on the other side, which I would argue spend way more money in trying to manipulate our elections and manipulate our politicians. And they never complain about that. Now, understand, I don't want money in politics, period. Like, I don't care if it's Democrats, I don't care if it's Republicans. I don't think money in politics should be part of our political system. But it's just funny to hear one side complain about something that they're benefiting from, and they're benefiting from it, you know, in a big way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Money makes the world go round.
It does. I mean, money makes the political system go round, I guess.
1,000%.
But go around in a very corrupt way.
And let's just, you know, George Soros' passions have always been to help people and to help fund, you know, the things that he's very passionate about. So if you had 10 to 15, 20 different people that wanted to do the same thing, what's the problem with that? The problem is you have someone who's extremely wealthy, more wealthy than a lot of others. So case in point, if Bill Gates or like Tim Cook or somebody like that was actually out here doing, you know, funding whatever system that they want, because there's a lot of rhetoric right now of Silicon Valley wanting to create a whole new political party, per se, mm-hmm. or a new movement. And if you knew the billionaires that were a part of that, it's like Soros times 10, mm-hmm. which is very
incredible. Is that the alt-left movement? I mean, I don't even want to say that. From this point forward, I'm no longer using alt-right. Like, I'm done using alt-right. Like, yeah. I want to call them what they are. And they're white nationalists, and that's it. Like, they're white supremacists.
Yeah.
I'm not going to allow them to use any kind of euphemism to describe themselves. So alt-right, it's like nails on a chalkboard at this point when I hear it.
We're at war with terrorism, racism.
The term alt-right is making headlines lately as people who adopt that label throw their support behind President-elect Donald Trump. KUOW has decided to not use that term anymore. Instead, we'll use white nationalism or white supremacy when those labels fit. For an explanation, I sat down with Isolde Raftery, KUOW's online editor. She told me people who identify with the alt-right label are mostly men who communicate online.
They tend to be very racist. They believe that we should have a separate white society. They don't believe in intermixing of people, so they really, you know, urban areas, no good. And then they also hate mainstream conservatives. They feel they've been co-opted with compromise and by the left. Now, there's a faction of these guys who say, hey, this is all just an intellectual exercise. We're just having a good time blowing up taboo language and playing with that. Leave us alone.
We're just joking. Don't. You
We're
know.
Just having a good time.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But if you kind of go deeper in and start reading through their chat rooms, you see actually they're very racist, sexist, Islamophobic, anti-Semitic. These truly are the values they put out there. And they say those people who think they're just having a good time, don't pay attention to them. We're serious.
So why is KUOW using the term white nationalism instead of the term alt-right?
We want to call them what they are. They aren't just racist, but they're loudly and aggressively racist. And we noticed that people weren't really understanding what alt-right meant. Some people even thought it was a computer shortcut, or they thought it was another way of thinking about the Tea Party. So we got to thinking readers and listeners shouldn't be the ones to have to decipher the news. It's on us as journalists to make sure that what they're hearing is clear. No caveats. This is on us.
Some KUOW listeners have told us they'd like us to use the term white supremacy instead. So why not do that?
So that's a great question. I have kind of grappled with that myself, like why not use white supremacy? And we will use white supremacy when that's warranted. From what I understand, white supremacy is part of white nationalism. White nationalism is apparently kind of the big umbrella term that includes white supremacy. And it's all about bringing these racist ideas into the political sphere. So it's about advancing white supremacist and white nationalist policies and legislation.
You know, some folks listening to us right now might be wondering, you know, come on, you're just splitting hairs when it comes to this. This is, you know, when it comes to this labeling, why is this issue so important to you and the editors at KUOW?
There were times when I was researching this that I felt it might be just an academic exercise. And I don't think it's just that. It is a little bit that. But as journalists, we have to break down language. And politicians like to float a lot of terms our way and labels that sanitize their message. You know, think of Bill Clinton's welfare to work policy. God, that sounds great. But it's a little more complicated than that. And then you have Obama saying clean coal. Like, what the heck does that even mean? Clean coal? But it sounds good.
And reporters just picked it up and ran with it.
Reporters just, that's exactly what we do. And that's really lazy. And I've probably done that. But right now, more than ever, we need to be very conscientious about the language we use. And in this case, we have a readership and a listenership that is hungering to understand what is going on and what is being and who is being brought into Donald Trump's White House. And this is our way of saying to people who think it's a computer shortcut, no, no, it's white supremacist ideology. All we have control over as journalists are our language and our facts, our words. And right now we have to cut through those buzzwords and the terms that contribute to the spin, the political spin out there.
KUOW's online editor, Isolde Raftery, telling us about KUOW's decision to stop using the term alt-right. And it's white man world,
we the ones chosen. All right, in just under 2 months, Donald Trump will take the oath of office, and there's no shortage of speculation about what sort of president he will be. Here's one example. He could either be a strongly pro-Israel president or someone seen by American Jews as accommodating anti-Semitism, or maybe both at the same time, as NPR's Tom Gelton explains.
Donald Trump's major speech before a Jewish audience was last March, when he assured the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee that he was a lifelong supporter and true friend of Israel. One promise in that speech got Trump a thunderous reception.
We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem.
Previous presidents have made that promise, but haven't kept it. Trump insists he'll be the exception. One of his closest advisors, his son-in-law Jared Kushner, is himself an Orthodox Jew. For those reasons, some American Jews have a positive impression of Trump. Rabbi Mark Dratch is executive vice president of the Orthodox Rabbinical Council of America.
The general sense is that he has a love of the state of Israel, that he understands the security needs of the state of Israel. He understands the special relationship that exists between the United States and Israel.
And yet, Dratch says his group worries about the people around Donald Trump.
The campaign and statements and tweets have opened the door for those with anti-Semitic or anti-minority or anti-Black or anti-Muslim feelings express themselves in ways that we have not seen for quite a while in this country.
This is the challenge for Trump. Being strongly pro-Israel may not be enough to assure American Jews his presidency will be good for them. For one thing, Jews are themselves a minority. Sentiments against immigrants or Muslims or other minorities, whether by Trump or his key supporters, can make Jews nervous. Jamie Kirchick is a columnist for Tablet magazine, which focuses on Jewish issues.
When you have a demagogic movement that targets people because of their race or ethnicity or whatever, it's only a matter of time before they come for the Jews. They might not be coming for the Jews now, but they will get around to them eventually.
Then there's the issue of what Trump does not say. Like when journalist Julia Yaffe wrote an article critical of Melania Trump and got subjected to a barrage of attacks on her as a Jew. Asked about those anti-Semitic slurs, Trump said only that Yaffe had written an inaccurate article. To Jane Eisner, that sounded like he was excusing the anti-Semitic attacks. Eisner is editor-in-chief of the Jewish newspaper The Forward.
By doing that, he has encouraged a far-right fringe, and I hope it's just a fringe, to feel empowered and to do the nasty things that they do in his name.
Lots of attention right now is on Steve Bannon, the Breitbart News executive serving as Trump's strategic advisor. Under his leadership, Breitbart has published anti-feminist, anti-Muslim, and anti-immigrant articles and won a reputation as being allied with those nationalists who favor white European values here. He's also pro-Israel, an outspoken Zionist. But the Tablet's Jamie Kirchick says white nationalists see Israel as organized along ethnic lines. For that reason, he says, they can be pro-Israel and still anti-minority here in the United States.
They see Israel as an ethno-nationalist state, and they want to mimic that in the United States. That's what they like.
The Zionist Organization of America held a big awards dinner last night. The group's leaders insist that Trump and Bannon are not anti-Semites, and they cite their pro-Israel positions as evidence. The group's leader tells NPR Bannon asked to attend the dinner. In the end, however, he did not show up. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Washington.
My mama was raised in the era when clean water was only served to the fairer skin. Doing clothes, you would have thought I had help, but they wasn't satisfied unless I picked the cotton myself.
On November 14th, Jordan Jackson, who was 8 years old and Black, was attacked by a group of white boys. During the beating, one of the assailants is said to have told Jackson, "You need to go back to the cotton farm." The incident, which left the young boy with a broken arm and a concussion, occurred on the grounds of Geismar, Louisiana's Spanish Lake Primary School. Shortly after the beating, Jackson's mother, Alana, addressed the brutality via Facebook, writing, "My 8-year-old son had to physically defend himself and his sister on the playground after a 13-year-old boy slammed him to the ground, breaking his arm and giving him a concussion. A 6-year-old threw mulch at them, and a 9-year-old told him to go back to the cotton farm." Jackson's uncle, Chris Colbert, has set up a GoFundMe page seeking donations to help with the family's rising medical expenses.
I be wallin' cause I'm young, wallin' cause I'm young, wallin' cause I'm young, wallin' cause I'm young, I be wallin' cause I'm young, I be wallin' cause I'm young.
That town hall meeting wrapping up here at the Ethical Society of St. Louis just a couple of minutes ago, the NAACP and school officials wanting to offer a safe space for families and students to really talk about some of the racial tension that we've seen over the past couple of weeks in the Ladue school system, that even led students to walk out and protest. Now, the purpose of tonight was to, again, have this open forum so that everyone could have their voices heard. I want to take you to one of the more candid moments of tonight's town hall meeting. Ladue alum Henry Duga actually telling everyone to get up and introduce themselves to someone they didn't know. Duga saying that this is the key to moving forward. He says accepting others, even when you don't know about them or when you have differences, is the key. Families, Ladue residents, as well as school officials, talking for about 2 hours tonight about the recent racial tensions in the school district. The purpose of tonight was for participants to tell their stories, their life experiences, what they experience on a daily basis so that everyone has a better picture of what people are going through and how they can all come together to move forward.
Somebody said that they hate me because of my skin color. How would you guys feel if somebody said that to you? I felt sad. It felt negative to me. He said something very negative. It felt offensive to me, and it just broke my heart.
If the superintendent and the school board really mean something, then they need to stand firm. They need to call all the faculty together and all the students and say, "We will not tolerate this kind of ugliness to our fellow human beings."
And something that was pretty interesting about tonight's town hall meetings, that current students as well as former students all saying that some of the issues that we've seen recently are issues that have been around for decades. Still, they all want to come together now to make sure that future generations do not experience this. We're told that there may be another town hall meeting in the future for people who may have already skipped town for the holidays so that they can have their chance to have their voices heard as well. NAACP officials and school officials and students and families who were here tonight all leaving saying that they felt that the outcome was positive. We're live tonight in St. Louis. I'm Jaron Jordan, Fox 2 News.
My Aunt Pam can't put them cigarettes down, so now my little cousin smoking them cigarettes now. His job try to claim that he too niggerish now. Is it because of skin blacker than licorice now? I can't figure it out.
Royal Oak Schools saying a child has been reprimanded in a racially charged incident. Good evening and thank you for joining us. I'm Amy Lang.
I'm Ron Savage. That child is now kicked out of school until further notice. Fox 2's Josh Lannon with the story.
On Friday, we learned a student here at Royal Oak Middle School admitted to hanging a noose in a boys' bathroom. Now the district is taking action by removing that kid from the school. And administrators will be talking to all the students in the week ahead. This video from last week at Royal Oak Middle School went viral. Students in the lunchroom chanting, "Build the wall." A day later, Fox 2 learned a student admitted to hanging a noose in the boys' bathroom. That student has now been removed from the middle school.
I think they've reacted appropriately without trying to get the situation overblown. It was unfortunate that it started with the video that went viral. In my own personal opinion, I think it's middle school kids. Middle school kids do stupid stuff sometimes.
The superintendent sent out a statement Sunday evening to alert parents of the week ahead. On Monday, he and the middle school principal will conduct meetings with each grade to inform them that intimidation, threats, harassment, and bullying will not be tolerated. In the end, these are still children, and this type of behavior from a kid is likely learned at home. Royal Oak's mayor is urging parents to be mindful of what they say or do.
Try to keep your opinions, if they're negative or positive or whatever, try to keep them away from the kids so that they don't pick it up. But, ask your kids how things are going. I've got a granddaughter that's in middle school. I ask her, how's things going? And quite honestly, she was upset because this is her school and it's embarrassing.
The ACLU has been looking into the matter, and Director Rod Moss claims he learned of more allegations where students have used racial slurs, including the N-word, towards fellow students of color.
As we began to look into it, we found that there were other allegations about harassment of students of color there and concerns about the climate being such that students of color were harassed on such a consistent basis that it became commonplace for them.
Going forward, you will also have parents such as Alicia Ramon keeping a close eye on the school. Her daughter recorded this video with the students chanting, "Build the wall."
I'm hopeful, and we are holding the district accountable. We're working with the district and to ensure that not only this incident doesn't occur, but future ongoing incidents, should they, hopefully not, but that those stop as well.
Superintendent says the district is investigating all of the allegations.
There will also be additional counselors and social workers here at the school to help any students affected by the recent incidents. In Royal Oak, Josh Landon, Fox 2 News.
Before you ask me to go get a job today, can I at least get a raise on the minimum wage? And I know the government administers aid, so I guess we just pray like the ministers say. Alu Akbar, throwing some hot cars. The things we seen on the screen, it's not ours. But these niggas from the hood, so these dreams not far. Where I'm from, the dope boys is the rock stars, but they can't cop cars without seeing cop cars. I guess they want us all behind bars. I know it.
Burnett County Judge James Oakley issued a written apology today for suggesting an accused cop killer in San Antonio should be lynched.
Fox 7's Rudy Kosky joins us in studio with more on what Judge Oakley and residents in Vernon have to say about this controversy. Rudy?
Rebecca and Mike, Judge Oakley says he's trying to express an opinion on what he considers to be a cowardly crime and senseless murder of a law enforcement officer. He admitted today the way he expressed his opinion should have been more thoughtful and comprehensive.
With her grandchildren in town for Thanksgiving, Diana Hudson brought them to the town square in Burnett to collect pecans. Harvesting what had fallen from the trees was certainly a lot easier than trying to understand a recent comment made by the county judge.
I mean, we're not back to that days. I would hope that we're not there.
It all started on the Facebook page of County Judge James Oakley. He posted, "Time for a tree and rope." This is a screenshot taken by James Walker before Oakley deleted it. The comment was in reference to the recent arrest of Otis McCain. He's the man charged with Sunday's murder of San Antonio Police Detective Benjamin Marconi. Judge Oakley's comment was immediately condemned as being racist, and his phone at his office Wednesday morning was ringing nonstop with complaints. Oakley issued this statement describing his comment as off the cuff, curt, and harsh. He was not in his office Wednesday when I came by, but he did speak to me by phone.
I certainly apologize for the way I expressed myself.
Judge Oakley told me he was expressing a personal view and was not posting as the county's top executive.
I in no means wanted to ever think about that being anything to do with racism.
At this barbershop on the town square, when asked about the judge's comment about the accused cop killer, owner Tom Hullum had this to say.
I don't think that he should even be tried.
Well, do you agree in what the judge said?
I am.
But a few seats over, barber Bert Martinez noted, Oakley had to take responsibility for creating the controversy. Do you accept the apology?
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, because, you know, sometimes you say things like this, and sometimes off the record, and sometimes, you know, it just comes out, you know, comes out.
So next time, maybe think first before you speak?
That's right, yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, I believe so.
The barbershop advice is something that Oakley told me he intends to remember, but he also said he will continue to be a supporter of the death penalty. Now, several people who have left comments about the original statement at Oakley's office expressed shock that a county judge would talk about a pending case, even if it wasn't even being tried in his jurisdiction. But Oakley pointed out that as an administrative judge, he doesn't preside over criminal court. And he went on to say that he was not trying to damage McCain's opportunity for due process.
You see, it's broke, nigga, race him. That's that, don't touch anything in the stove. And it's rich, nigga, race him. That's that, come in, please buy more.
Back now with a development debate along the oceanfront and a terse letter sent to city officials by one of the area's biggest names.
NFL Hall of Famer and project developer Bruce Smith says his proposal has been shot down by the city on several occasions, and in the letter, he says a lot of it has to do with race. Then at your side's Andy Fox has the letter and some questions for city officials. Andy?
Tom and Anita, tonight Bruce Smith puts into words concerning his business obstacles with the city using words like basis of race, mandate of the Old South, whites only, and closed to minorities. Bruce Smith's letter, scathing in its charge, that even with what he calls his own qualifications, I would ponder the possibility I am being unfairly marginalized and excluded on the basis of race. The letter addressed to Virginia Beach Mayor Will Sussums.
Absolutely wrong. Totally wrong. That statement is totally unacceptable. I welcome Bruce Smith making any proposal that he wants to do.
In 2005, Smith wanted to develop 10 acres at Rudy Loop. Mayor Sessoms calls this the most prime piece of property on the East Coast and not ready for development by anyone. Sessoms even spoke with Smith about it.
If you want to move forward, I would be guarded because I don't think it would make the cut for the type of development that we're looking at.
Smith and his partners then rejected in 2008 to develop the 11-acre dome site at 19th and Pacific, but that plan fell through. Then in 2014, only the Peterson companies submitted a dome site proposal.
They were the only ones. I wish he had, and I've told him I wish he had bid on that again.
Smith's letter continues, operating under the implicit mandate of the Old South, which would require the economic empowerment and enfranchisement be reserved for whites only.
We can show you numbers that the city of Virginia Beach has greatly reached out to minority businesses and contractors.
Last fiscal year, minority-owned expenditures from the city, $17.4 million, and that's up 23% over the previous year.
I'm glad to see that he already is doing business in Virginia Beach.
Sessom points out Smith and his partners, including Hampton University, are investors here at the Hyatt Place Hotel at 27th and Atlantic Avenue, Oceanfront, and the Cosmopolitan Apartments at Town Center. Smith told me there is a difference between being an investor like he is and being the developer who deals with the city. Smith writes, the Virginia Beach establishment, safely guarding its gate to ensure that its most hallowed and exclusive club remains forever closed to minorities.
The more diverse our investments are down at the oceanfront makes our city stronger.
Bruce Smith was not available for an on-camera interview today, but says he will hold a news conference on Monday. In the newsroom, Andy Fox, 10 on your side.
And read those words, my stomach just dropped. I couldn't believe that.
Only 11 talking to the man who found a racist message spray painted right behind his own house. Only Channel 11's Damani Lewis spoke to him and ran into police in that alley. And Damani, you learned how the community is responding to this tonight.
Well, David, neighbors are taking this serious, and so is the police chief. He actually came out to the scene to see those hateful words for himself. High above light poles throughout Homestead, the borough honors veterans who served their country.
Oh my gosh.
But here in this nearby alley, off 14th Avenue, on the ground.
It was just really disgusting and upset me very much.
Veteran Jaquay Carter is dismayed, wanting to know why someone would disrespect his family and his race with a message of hate just outside his back door.
And I was completely outraged. It was just a shock, you know, especially just for this neighborhood.
A message we won't show you in full, using the N-word. Carter found it late Friday night cleaning his backyard.
To go backwards with something like this, especially as someone who has, you know, done my service for the country and tried to do things to improve the community and do outreach and ethnic and diversity studies, it's just something that you don't even think would happen.
While Carter was speaking with Channel 11, Homestead Police Chief Jeff DeSimone arrived, wanting to know more about the hateful message now covered in paint.
That's why I wanted to come and see.
We asked if this was an issue here. The police chief calls it an isolated incident, one he says his officers will keep a close eye on.
Wait and see. Could it be a spur of the moment thing? Can it be a prank? This isn't much to go on. I don't know, but we'll see if it sprouts up again.
For Carter, the words may be gone, painted away by Burl Cruz. But for him, he's remembering stronger words he grew up believing in.
I'm a firm believer of, I have friends of all walks of life.
And this evening, I actually got a chance to speak with the borough mayor and manager, and they tell us that this is a diverse community, and they believe also that this is an isolated incident. We're live tonight. Damani Lewis, Channel 11 News.
The Sac Metro Fire Department is investigating claims one of its firefighters wrote racist posts on his Facebook page.
One of the posts reads, quote, "Illegal immigrants welcome. We need the target practice." CBS 13 Steve Large is live with more on these disturbing allegations. Steve?
And so far, Sac Metro is not confirming these personal Facebook posts came from one of their firefighters, but a source tells CBS 13 the posts were from a Sac Metro firefighter who has since taken down that Facebook account.
One of the Facebook posts references a Trump border wall and suggests building private shooting ranges, allowing American citizens to hone their skills. The post reads, "Illegal immigrants welcome. We need the target practice." Another posted on election night reads, "Okay, is it me or what? On the TV, they're really showing riots in the street over the election. I change the channel, and what do I see? Planet of the Apes." Ironic? Sac Metro Fire released a statement reading, "Metro Fire cannot confirm whether the Facebook page or the posts are connected to any employee in the district. Metro Fire is currently investigating the claim. And Metro Fire does not condone statements which may be perceived as threatening or discriminatory towards members of the public we serve." Now it's alarming Facebook posts that has Sac Metro launching an investigation.
And I reached out to the firefighter identified to us several times today. My messages were not returned, and no one answered his door.
Disturbing to say the least, Steve. All right, we'll follow up with this, no doubt. Thanks.
Black bodies swinging in the summer breeze.
This is new at 6. A Salem city councilor shares a violent, racially charged video on Facebook. Now a local activist is calling for him to step down.
K2's Joe Douglas is live in Salem with this story for us. And Joe, this video shows several African-American people being run over by vehicles.
And Steve, we want to warn you, the video is disturbing. The counselor apparently did not shoot the footage himself, but it is very violent, claiming to show Black Lives Matter protesters being hit as they demonstrate in the street. Ominous music plays as a crowd gathers on a street. Suddenly, a car plows into them. It's just one of a series of collisions shown in the video shared Thursday by Salem City Councilor Daniel Benjamin.
Run.
The post includes a description from conservative blogger Ron Dwyer saying people are starting to get tired of the Black Lives Matter bullies blocking the roadways.
So it's very indecent, you know, when it comes from public officials.
I talked by phone with Teresa Rayford about the video. She's lead organizer of Don't Shoot Portland, which she claims is the most active Black Lives Matter group in Oregon.
I think it's sickening and it's pretty much disgusting. It's promoting racial intimidation, harassment, and possibly murder. I think he needs to resign. You know, ask him to resign or just go ahead and get done with him.
Salem Mayor Anna M. Peterson says she's horrified by the video.
It actually made my stomach churn when I could see people actually being mowed down on purpose.
She says she talked with Benjamin Monday afternoon.
I told him that I was disappointed and shocked at the video. And I suggested that he take it down. We're striving hard to let people in the community know that the city of Salem stands firmly beside the civil rights of every person in this city.
Councilor Benjamin tells me off camera the post was on his personal Facebook page, and although it was public, anyone who doesn't like it can unfriend him. He also says it has nothing to do with race, and anyone inferring he's a racist is actually racist.
I think that's hogwash, and we all know it. It is promoting racism.
I'm just extremely disappointed.
Will he face any kind of action from the city?
I am not sure about that.
Mayor Peterson just emailed me saying the city attorney told her they can't remove a councilor unless he's convicted of a crime. But she says the city council does have the option of publicly censuring Benjamin. She says she's going to talk with him again, and his reaction will determine her next steps. Live in Salem, Joe Douglas, K2 News.
I want you to imagine that I came into your house. I want you to imagine that while I was there, and you were away somewhere, went through your drawers, I went through your cupboards. How'd that make you feel? I wonder how you would feel if I went into your car, went through the glove compartment, looked under all the seats. Or what if I got all your passwords for your social media, for your email? What if I got all your text messages and I went through all of them because I thought that something there might be interesting or useful to me? How would that make you feel? And then I wonder if after you found out that I had done this, violated your privacy and taken things from you that were none of my business, I wonder how you would feel if I just said, well, you know, I know that I took your stuff, but it might be really useful to me now. So, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and keep it. This is the decision that the Toronto Police Service Board made this past Thursday about the issue of police carding. An issue that I've been talking about the entire time I've had this program, because this racist practice just won't go away, and it won't be taken away by the people who have the power to do so. On Thursday, the Police Services Board voted not only to continue carding under certain circumstances, which I'm about to explain to you momentarily, but they also decided that they were going to keep all of the data that they have collected through this illicit practice over many years in a database. I just want to remind everybody listening that there was a section on these contact cards, millions of contact cards over the years collected by our police. There was a section on these contact cards that said young person information, where the police were knowingly collecting the information of people under the age of 18, sometimes little kids as old as 9 and 10 years old, who don't even have ID yet, were stopped by your Toronto police and demand that they identify themselves. And when the kids gave their names and their address and the phone number and the mom's name and the dad's name and school and where they were going and what they were doing and what the friend's name was that they were hanging out with, the police would say, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they would put that information into a database. This happened to people who were driving and pulled over for no reason, driving while black, walking while black. We know this practice targeted disproportionately black people, indigenous people, people with mental health issues, homeless people. Don't talk to me about Donald Trump and racism. We've got it right here. Discriminating against people because of who they are and taking their information to build a case about nothing against them. Well, carding is a violation of the laws that we have in this country because you and I and everybody else has the right to travel, to walk through our streets, to drive without being stopped and detained and questioned and held up by the police. We have that right, but it has been serially violated. And now the information that was collected through that theft, through that violation, well, the board voted that the police can continue to have access to that information. Now they're saying, oh, well, you know, everybody used to be able to access it before, but now only the chief or whoever he chooses to can access it. But I don't understand that because it doesn't belong to the chief of police. It's not his information. It's the information of the people of Toronto, and it should never have been collected in the first place. So what on earth does the chief or any other police officer need with that information going forward? The idea that police can use information against us that they didn't obtain legally, that exposes the corruption and the moral bankruptcy of our system. I want you to listen to Chief Mark Saunders. He came out of this meeting on Thursday, and I had a couple of questions for him about using information that you acknowledge you took from people illegally and without any reason. Here's my conversation with Mark Saunders.
Chief Saunders, you have said that not all the information was collected illegally, but some of it was. Do you know which information was collected illegally and which wasn't?
Well, you know, that's a fair question, and the answer to that is no. And that's why we have lawsuits, because some people are saying those stops, those encounters were unlawful, and we want to bring it before a judicial system. And you know what? Any Canadian citizen has the right to do just that. And so
doesn't that then mean that you're saying to us you're comfortable continuing to use information even though you don't know whether or not it was collected legally? Isn't that what you're saying?
Des, the fact that you're putting words in my mouth, I never said anything. I never said anything about being comfortable.
I never said anything about being comfortable using your stolen information, says the chief of police of the city of Toronto. I never said I was comfortable doing it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Even if it makes you uncomfortable, even if it makes you unsafe, even if it threatens your job, as Carding has done with people. I wrote a story this year about Ayan Farah, a woman who worked at Pearson Airport, who was never suspected of any crime, never charged with any crime. And one day her airport clearance, her security clearance, was just taken away from her. And when she asked Transport Canada, why did you take away my security clearance? They said, well, we got some information that you may have a connection to gang members, and so we can't have you working here. Guess where that information came from, guys? From the Toronto Police carding people and deciding that they knew Ayan Farah. She lost her job. Don't tell me that this doesn't have consequences for Black people's lives and for all the lives of people that it targets, but specifically because it's targeting us disproportionately, it's having a disproportionate effect on our lives. One of the other problems with what happened on Thursday was that the board decided that it's going to continue the practice of carding. They would have you believe in a limited way, in a much more limited way than took place before. Now, guys, a violation of my rights and my dignity as a human being is a violation. Telling me it might happen less often is not good enough. If you see that as progress, it's because this doesn't affect you. You can lose your life once in a needless encounter with police. You can lose your life. You can lose your job. You can lose your well-being. You can go to jail. You can get a record that will stop you from working because of one needless interaction with the police. But the Toronto Police Board said, we'll limit the amount that the police can card you. We'll limit the circumstances. And one of the things that they said was still okay in Toronto going forward is that police don't have to just get your ID if they think you're actually committing a crime. They can do it if they think that you're acting suspiciously. And suspicion and suspicious, these are the words that the board is using and adopting in this policy. Guys, I want to read you a quote by Ta-Nehisi Coates that says, racism is not merely a simplistic hatred. It is more often broad sympathy towards some and broader skepticism towards others. So all you're saying when you say that suspicion is a good enough reason to take someone's information, think about it. Think about it. You see me lurking in my bushes at 3 a.m. or wherever you guys think carding happens. I have to be doing something, right, for you to warrant my name and my information. So you get my name and my information, and you see that I have a clean record. I've never done anything before. Maybe I'm a well-known talk show host. Suddenly, you don't have any suspicion anymore. That's what we have allowed in the city of Toronto to continue. The suspicion of Black people, of Indigenous people, of people with mental health issues, of homeless people. I got to live under your suspicion? This is never, ever going to stand, and we have to organize ourselves to resist this illicit practice of carding since the people in power can't decide to stop it.
It don't gotta be Mother's Day or your birthday for me to just call and say,
hey, mama,
I want to scream so loud for you. I'm so proud of you.
Proud.
Let me tell you what I'm about to do.
Hey, mama.
You know I love you so.
La-la-la-la-la-la.
I'm gonna let you go.
La-la-la-la-la.
This song just so you know. No matter
what you got. Hey, mama.
We begin tonight with a convicted rapist and former police officer. Daniel Holtzclaw now back in the spotlight after a controversial billboard questioning the guilty verdicts he received. Was prompting an upcoming TV piece about Holtzclaw's trial and interviews with people who claim he was wrongfully convicted. News Channel 4's Abby Broyles joins us with that story. And Abby, you exclusively spoke with Holtzclaw on the phone tonight.
Yeah, that's right, Linda. And victims' advocates were furious when that billboard went up with Holtzclaw's picture questioning his guilt. Holtzclaw told me tonight he was disappointed the billboard has been taken down, but he's more focused on his appeal. And he told me he's confident he'll get a new trial.
I'm aware that the billboard has come down, and I'm a little disheartened, but I'm encouraged so much with the ongoing supporters who believe in my innocence.
This is the billboard Daniel Holtzclaw is talking about. It was up at I-44 in Kelly. A picture of Holtzclaw in his orange jumpsuit and the words, "What if he didn't do it?"
It's the visual. It's the visual of him.
Victims advocate Grace Franklin says she was shocked when she saw the billboard. She led the group of demonstrators at Holtzclaw's trial.
I couldn't believe that someone would have the gall to put that on this side of the community, on the northeast side of Oklahoma City. It was so disturbing and such a slap in the face for those survivors.
This billboard didn't accuse the accusers of being liars, of being drug addicts, of being any of those things. It simply asked a question. What if he didn't do it?
Brian Bates was the private investigator on Holtzclaw's defense team and is featured in the series that paid for the billboard.
That billboard being up wasn't going to do anything to prove Daniel was guilty or innocent.
Right now, Holtzclaw's appeal is pending. His attorneys want more time after it was revealed that, along with one of the alleged victims' DNA, another man's DNA was found on Holtzclaw's pants that wasn't his. Evidence never provided to the jury that convicted him.
I'm very confident in my fellow lawyer, and I'm confident in my team and the supporters that I have. I'm just very blessed to have that. I'm confident that all the new discovery that we have found throughout the trial, I'm talking pretty positive when I get to the retrial.
As far as putting the billboard in northeast Oklahoma City where Holtzclaw patrolled, I reached out to the media outlet producing the series. They released a statement late tonight saying in part, quote, CRTV supports free speech. We are disappointed that Tyler Media caved into pressure to take down the billboard, end quote. And that billboard company, which is a division of Tyler Media, said it took down the billboard because it was in the best interest of the community.
It's movement time. As the Trump presidency takes shape, there is wailing and gnashing of teeth. Disbelief meshes with despair, and some are, quite frankly, desolate. Dry your tears, blow your noses, and join movements of resistance to this madness. Blacks in America have never known a time when resistance wasn't necessary, including life under a black president. For centuries, for generations, people have had to struggle for freedom, for respect, for justice. Why should this time be any different? The ancestors, like the revered Frederick Douglass, lambasted Abraham Lincoln as a fool or a coward who wouldn't fight the Civil War with thousands of willing black troops. Said Douglass, if there is no struggle, there is no progress. Said Douglass, power concedes nothing without demand. So let us struggle. Let us build movements that lift our hearts. Let us remake our history with the brick and mortar of struggle. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Right now, press, get ready to write your passive-aggressive, LeBron James racist comments. Season 4, racist comments. Get ready to have a field day, press. Get ready. Get ready. because the show's over.
Break records of Louis, ate breakfast of Gucci. My girl a superstar, all from a home movie. Bow on our arrival, the un-American idols. When niggas didn't pay us, got them hanging off the Eiffel. Yeah, I'm talking business, we talking CIA. I'm talking George Tenet, I seen him the other day. He asked me about my Maybach, think he had the same. Except my tenant and his might have been rented. You know white people get money, don't spend it. Or maybe they get money by business. I'd rather buy 80 gold chains and go ignorant. I know Spike Lee gon' kill me, but let me finish. Blaming on a pigment, we live in no limits. Them gold masterpiece ceilings was just a figment of our imagination. MTV Cribs, now I'm looking at a crib right next to where TC lives. That's Tom Cruise, whatever she accused. He wasn't really drunk, he just had fruit bruise. Pass the refreshments, a cool, cool beverage. Everything I do need a news crew's presence. Speedboat swerve, homie, watch out for the waves. I'm way too black to burn from sun rays. So I just meditate at the home in Pompeii about how I could build a new Rome in one day. Every time I'm in Vegas, they screaming like he's Elvis. But I just want to design hotels and nail it. Shit is real, got me feeling Israelian like Bar Raphael or Giselle. No, that's Brazilian. Went through deep depression when my mama passed. Suicide, what kind of talk is that? But I've been talking to God for so long. Now, if you look at my life, I guess he's talking back, fucking with my clique.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Saturday, November 26th, 2016. So I have been told. Negro Saturday. Just had Black Friday. Now we're with Negro Saturday here on the Compensatory Call-In. If you have commentary you would like to share, feel free to dial in the number 641-715-36. 40. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. A couple of quick things before we get to folks who dialed in. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. When you hit the blog top right corner, you will see our PayPal address. If you're not into PayPal, drop us an email. We will get you a physical mailing address. Huge thanks to all the folks who have supported, invested, got stuff from our wish list at Amazon.com or whatever you've done. Sharing, certainly. We always appreciate people sharing the program. You can share it on your social media sites right now, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you use. But thanks to all the folks who have invested, supported nearly 8 years. Hopefully we have helped some folks get a better understanding of what racism, white supremacy is, how it works, and maybe even helped you maintain through the first round of the major horror days of 2016. You heard quite a bit of Kanye West music during the audio segment. I have stated for years, you know, we don't just play tunes just for, you know, a little shake and do a little cutting the rug time. Everything that we play is relevant. It is in context and is supposed to help with our understanding of racism, white supremacy. I think a good number of folks saw the reports that Mr. Kanye West had to agree to medical attention for stress and exhaustion. This was widely reported throughout the week, and he had some rant at a concert in California Earlier in the week, I played the portion at the end where he talked about leaving. He is a victim of racism, white supremacy. I will only submit that I have written about Kanye West before and black mental health. You can go back. It is within the context of my album review of his 2013 release, Yeezus. You heard a few tunes from that project in the opening audio. Moving forward. One thing, I guess I'm putting it out there as a question. People can think about it or respond. Richard Spencer, this is the white man with the National Policy Institute. He's been everywhere. Roland Martin had an interview with him on News One this week. This is the white man who did the segment on Reveal a couple weeks back. I played that audio on the broadcast where he talked about, you know, I think he said specifically it was he was not really about, quote unquote, fairness. He was about domination. I think that was what he said. I'd have to go back to refresh my memory. But I have seen him everywhere. He did a piece on NPR. He has just been all over. You even heard in the BBC. I think they were referencing him in the BBC clip that I played. It's just been amazing. Does anyone find that to be suspicious? This is a person I would be curious if anyone had heard of him. Even 30 days before the election, did you know who this guy was? Were you hearing him? Was he doing all of these interviews on major mainstream outlets? Why now is he getting so much attention? Did he have that much of a role in Trump's victory? Just putting that out there, it is curious to me, as well as now. The popular use of the term white nationalism. I think someone referenced that before. What do we think is behind that? What does that represent? Are people providing a definition when they use the term? Just putting that out there for something for folks to consider. Also, we had, I generally don't do this because I guess ordinarily we have time during each broadcast for people to kind of give their thoughts, what they thought about the guest or to ask the guest questions specifically. I felt like we had two programs this week with Mr. Paul Ifeoma Grant in the UK talking about his piece on most African Americans deserving Trump presidency, and then the program we had with Dr. Athena Matua. She was with us on Tuesday, and we talked about many things, but specifically about the notion of black male privilege, if folks had any thoughts on those programs. Very interesting broadcasts, even similar in some sense, I might submit. At any rate, I had a few other things, but I will pause there. If you could take 5 minutes with whatever commentary you would like to share, whatever it is that you want to discuss, 5 minutes, that would give everyone an opportunity to share. And then once everybody goes one time, then we should have additional time afterwards for everyone to make their additional comments or questions or whatever they want to get in. Also, if we could not have metaphors, we heard some very interesting metaphors throughout this week, I think. I made an effort to point that out as we moved along, but very interesting metaphors. If we could just make an effort to be direct, explicit about what we mean, that would be great. You can articulate whatever views you have about racism, white supremacy, counter-racism. That's fine, but just I've concluded that a lot of times racists, whites, they are deliberately making comparisons, using analogies, metaphors, that they're comparing things that are not equivalent. They do this on a constant basis, and I'm submitting it's being done deliberately to practice racism, to be deceptive, to cause confusion. I also submit that a lot of times victims of racism, including myself, that just in our effort to try to express our views and even still our confusion about racism, I think sometimes we employ metaphors because we still don't have complete understanding of what it is that we're trying to express. So we will employ metaphors or analogies to help our explanation. And I've just concluded a lot of times the metaphors, the comparisons, they're not equivalent. I don't necessarily think it's being done deliberately. It's just, I think, a part of our confusion, a part of being victims. But I think it is best. I'm not saying that you always, you know, have to refrain from metaphors, but just on this program, if we cannot use metaphors and under any and all circumstances, I think it is very important to pay attention when people use metaphors. For example, I didn't have this in the audio, but I certainly paid attention. I think they were giving out awards. I think this will be President Obama's last time giving out the medals of freedom. Many notable folks down through the years have received this honor. I think Diane Rehm and quite a few other, she hosts a radio program on NPR, and quite a few other notable folks, some victims of racism, even some folks who have fought against racism, white supremacy. If memory serves, I think Bill Cosby might even have gotten one of these. But anyway, Ellen DeGeneres was at the White House to get her award. And my note, I think B. Moore put it on my Facebook page. My comment was, the gay Rosa Parks gets her due. That is always my homage. Chris Rock, we talked about earlier this week with Mr. Grant. Chris Rock, a couple years back, he called Ellen DeGeneres the gay Rosa Parks metaphor. That's what I mean. I'm not saying that we shouldn't use metaphors and what have you. They can be very, very powerful tools to convey information. I'm just saying when we're talking about racism, we should be alert when people use metaphors to make sure we understand what's being said. And I also think for this particular program, just to get in that habit, no metaphors. That'll get us in a practice of being mindful about what we say. With that, the number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. If you have any incidents from Thanksgiving, there was the one that I read about the race soldier. White woman at the Thanksgiving festivity, cowbell would be there, where racism came up and we had a weeping white woman and she stormed out of the festivities. But if you have any anecdotes from Thanksgiving, that would be great. And it doesn't have to be bad. If you were able to bring up the topic of racism and it worked out well and you were able to share some information, get some people, hey, check out Pam's book, you know, read it, great information, and it worked out well, we certainly want to hear that. Or if you were able to use some of your counter-racism techniques to minimize conflict, great, outstanding. Or just to get things constructive to happen with people that you care about, outstanding. That's welcome also. But if you have any interesting notes you would like to share from how you handled the first round of horror days, share that also. All the folks, or the first few folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free to participate.
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right. Greetings, guests, and to the rest of the callers. So just due to one of the audios that I heard in the previous hour, so just about the one where three white children broke this one black child's arm and knocked him unconscious, threw mulch at him, and the 9-year-old child said, go back to the cotton farms. I find that pretty interesting to hear from this little child's mouth because, I mean, I know that this isn't all his fault. I just know that I know for sure that it's either the parents' fault or the adults that are in his life. It's their fault because they're putting these thoughts into their children, and they're using it to affect the rest of the world. And I just know that it's not okay, and it's just it's nonsense, really, because this as far as I know, children are supposed to be creative and curious about life. Just they shouldn't be worried about anything at the moment, but just knowing that the 11-year-old broke the black child's arm, the 6-year-old threw mulch at the child, well, kicked mulch at the child, and actually the 9-year-old told the black child go back to the cotton farms, I just know that it's the parents' fault because the parents would actually talk to them and say, that's not okay. You shouldn't do that. That's very disrespectful, and it's not okay to do. Love everybody. Just don't do that. But they didn't say that, and they ended up doing that. And it's just their fault. And just based on Black Friday, well, it's been popular to me since 2013. That's when I first heard about it. And throughout the years that I've heard about it, it's been a disaster. It's just been madness. Just people fighting over this one item that they can get any time at a slight discount at the most. A slight discount or a pretty big discount, either way, they could have got it any time of the year. This is mostly for Christmas, though, just to be specific. This and I find it pretty ironic that this is the day before Thanksgiving where we meet up with the family and eat food and then say how thankful we are for what we have. But then again, the next day, we go out trampling people for this one TV that we wanted. Even though we already have a TV at our house, we want another one for Christmas. And I just find that pretty ironic to say. And it's just, I also saw this one video where Black Friday was held in Canada, and the employees were actually clapping for their customers for coming into their shops and whatever. And it was just pretty peaceful, and it was so quiet. And I just noticed, I just had to take in that comparison between different countries and how the United States runs Black Friday. And just one more thing before I get off the phone. So I also noticed, well, I didn't notice it, but I just kept thinking, I just found Black Friday pretty suspicious. It just sounds weird. It makes me think about just a discount of buying a slave in the 1800s, in the 19th century. Just a discount for buying slaves, and it just sounds weird. I mean, just out of all names, you chose Black Friday, but I don't know. That's just my idea. It might be wrong. It could be right, but that's just my opinion and my idea. But that's all I wanted to share. Thank you for taking my call.
Can I go?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Awesome. Yes, this is Ken Steele, and I am in Orange County this evening. And I just wanted to start off by saying that nobody breaks somebody's arm without serious conviction to do so themselves. There may be some sort of external forces that may have instructed or guided somebody toward breaking another person's arm, but the act of breaking another person's limb takes an incredible amount of will, regardless of a person's age. So the previous caller, I just want to advise you that the people that you were talking about in the first part of your call, the children that you were speaking of, one of them broke a black child's arm, another kicked mulch upon this child, and then a third told this child to go back to the cotton fields, a direct reference to slavery. Definitely, in fact, the people who from the act themselves, they made the decision to do that themselves. Do not be disarmed by a suspected white supremacist age. Do not be thrown off by that. They operate with extreme efficiency, even at very young ages. So please be informed that that they can perform racism against you. Our enemies are very, very well informed of this fact. If I could have you recall the movie American Sniper, the movie opens with Chris Kyle killing an Iraqi woman and an Iraqi child. Those are the first two kills that are in the movie. And in the movie, they depict the woman, I believe she was throwing a grenade, and then the child picked up the grenade, and then both of them, by the end of the scene, were taken out. And they depicted that their comrades, as a result, justifiable, I guess, kills. So So please be informed, well aware that at our youngest ages, that that the enemy still represents a threat. So please, please, please be informed. Also, I think that there was very goings on in the media this week with respect to Roland Martin. I know that people are passing around that video as an example of somebody, you know, sticking it to white supremacists or whatever, but Roland Martin performed very, in my estimation, very poorly and did not have an understanding of how these suspected white supremacists or these white supremacists admitted function in conversation. There were a number of different points where this suspected white supremacist tripped Roland Martin up. And I don't know if that's because I don't know what the reason that Roland Martin was not prepared to deal with that, but I think a key point in his lack of preparation came in the fact that he had not identified himself as a black man or a black person primarily first, whereas this suspected white supremacist owned their identity as a white person. I think that one of the things that they have done with us is they are currently telling us to stay away from so-called identity politics. When people who identify themselves as white, who are operating against those who they identify as non-white, they are engaging in some of the most potent form of identity politics. And these are people like Bernie Sanders. These are supposed liberals that are telling supposed Democrats that we need to stay away from supposed identity politics. And I think it's very, very, very suspicious that these people are making those claims when in fact we are seeing the rise of identity politics, and they're identifying it as such simultaneously to these calls that we should not be engaging in so-called identity politics. And finally, I want to say that
That's been five.
One of the things
hang tight. No apologies. We'll swing back to you so you can share your final thoughts. Other folks that we have not heard from, if we have not heard from you at all and you had commentary, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. Some of you may know that Fidel Castro died today. And being that the retired firefighters in South Florida has been here for 59 years, I have lived through a large process of the quote-unquote Cuban experience. To frame it in a counter-racist narrative, I would say that basically what took place down here in South Florida, there was a replacement of white supremacists who spoke English to white supremacists who speak Spanish, who are now residing in the South Florida area that came from the island of Cuba. The best authority that I can give to anybody who wanted to research this process, what goes on in Cuba from a white supremacist standpoint and also in South Florida, is to study Dr. Carlos Moore. He has wrote two books on the subject. The first one, while he was a instructor at Florida International University, the book is called Castro, the Blacks in Africa. The second book is, I believe it's called Putting Context to Cuba's Racial Divide, where he is very thorough on it. To give a little bit of knowledge on Dr. Carlos Moore, he had a long relationship with Malcolm X. starting in 1960 when Fidel Castro came to New York. He decided instead of meeting with the regular white, quote-unquote, dignitaries, he decided to have dinner with the black people in Hotel Teresa in 1960, as well as with the quote-unquote most militant anti-white racism people, which included Malcolm X. Dr. Moore also was with Malcolm when he was supposed to have his first meeting of his international leg of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. And they were taken into custody at the airport in Paris and subsequently denied entrance into Paris, into France. At a point in the late 80s, actually acted as Dr. Moore's, one of his escorts, bodyguards at the time, because he had a lot of death threats on this issue during that time in the late 80s. They were still blowing up people's homes because, you know, most of these white Cubans were trained by the white people of this military in this part of the world. So that's basically is my workplace racism for the week. As I mentioned, the book Castro, the Blacks in Africa is one of Dr. Moore's books, and the other one is Put in Context the Cuba's Racial Divide, which is a more recent book. Thank you.
Other folks we have not heard from, did you all have commentary? Let us not lollygag.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus, and to all the callers and the listeners. I wanted to start first with Fidel Castro and just say for him to rest in peace. I would say he's done quite a bit for black people around the world, specifically the island that's my home, which is Trinidad and Tobago. He helped us quite a bit in regards to sending nurses to Trinidad because there's always been quite a heavy shortage of nurses there, and they were able to teach quite a few of them out there and also help save a lot of lives in terms of the medical care that they helped to provide there, as well as the work he did in Africa and throughout the diaspora. So I just wanted to just give a big up to him. Also, in regards to the clips you played on Donald Trump, I just say that the closer we get to him taking a seat in the president's chair, I think the more he's just exposing white people for everything that they truly are. And I just find it to be extremely revealing and refreshing to see what he's bringing forward. And I think a lot of what I felt in regards to me wanting him to win, in regards to him doing exactly what he's doing now and hopefully bringing a lot of black people and non-white people to the realization that this country is a racist, white supremacist country and that all white people are racist. So I think he's doing a great job at that, and I wish him the best to continue doing so. So more people can come to that realization and hopefully decide to try and do something about it. In regards to Kanye West, I find that to be a situation to be very sad, very disgusting, and I just think he should take a hint from Lamar Odom and get as far away from those pale females as possible. When Lamar Odom got away from Khloe Kardashian, he started taking care of his children. He got himself cleaned up as far as rehab, and he's been making it a point to stay as far away from them as possible. And that's something that I saw in an article a few months back, and I'm hoping that he takes a hint from that because I'm pretty much 100% sure. I could be wrong, but for me, I'm 100% sure that just being in that terroristic environment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and being sexually abused and terrorized by Kim Kardashian is the reason he's sitting in a mental health facility right now. So I do wish him a speedy recovery. In regards to the show with Dr. Matua, I thought it was a very good show. I think that her ideology of black male, I guess it was kind of like a black male patriarchy. And can you give me insight into that again? Because I can't articulate it exactly the way she said it. Gus?
To be as brief as possible, this is kind of a crude synopsis, but that you have multiple systems of domination or supremacy, male supremacy being one of them, and black males are participants, criminals, if you would, in the enterprise of male supremacy. And so they benefit from that, even though sometimes they are mistreated on the basis of being black males. That's kind of a crude, quick summation of her position.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say I don't agree with that. The reason why I don't is because of the reasons that you actually put forward on the show, that we as black males are victims of white supremacy. And I believe that any incidences in which black males practice patriarchy over any female, or especially black females, those are isolated incidents, just like I don't ever believe that any black person can be a racist. I believe that there's isolated incidences in which black people might be in certain positions of power, and they might manipulate and use those specific positions in that specific environment to get away with things that they might not necessarily be able to get away with in a normal setting. But outside of those isolated incidences, I do not see that to be the case at all. So I totally disagree with her on that, but she did make a lot of salient points. I think that's also where Dr. Curry also kind of digressed as far as how he felt as far as some of the things that she was presenting. So that's my take on that. But I think it was a very good show, and I would like to have her back on. In regards to Richard Spencer, I just think that essentially Donald Trump getting elected basically brought him out from whatever rock he was under to come out and publicly say what he's always wanted to say. I believe that people like him helped facilitate him getting into office in the first place. And now that he is in office, these are the people that will be the benchmarks of what he is supposed to do in regards to how he practices racism, white supremacy during his presidency. And that is in addition to the information he's getting from more powerful whites behind the scenes, just like President Obama was getting manipulated and controlled by more powerful whites from behind the scenes. I believe if Donald Trump is defiant in regards to those more powerful whites, that they will take him out and we'll probably have another assassination and Mr. Pence will take over. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, my people. I'm the son of Koshag. My name is Jacque Shabazz. And I would like to say to you first, sir, that I love how you're doing your thing with the show. I like how you open it up with a date, and or so I've been told. And, you know, the audacity and the nerve that a black man must have to do such as you're doing, you know. So my congrats and my compliments to you for that, bro. I would like to say that I think the only cure for racism is the same cure that there is for anything that ails human beings. And that cure is Islam. I don't know what any of you yourself or any of the listeners think about religion as a whole, because I know most people group Islam in with Christianity and any other religion. Oh, it's like this, so it must be like that. And I'd like to take a moment to give a couple of quick examples.
Program we're promoting any sort of religious practice or spiritual practice. I think we have people here at least that are familiar on some level with Islam. If that's your belief, if you think that'll help us solve this problem, that's great, but that's not what this platform is intended for.
Okay, cool. Well, let me skip that and say this. Back to white supremacy then. When I was about 28 years old, I looked up and realized almost everything I'd ever been taught in my whole life was a damn lie here in the western part of the world by these westerners or white people. And it was only a few years after I had got done reading the ISIS papers, Keys to the Colors, and in that book right there, the Black Queen, Frances Cress Welsing, she teaches us that it's melanin that is the ultimate threat to the white man and his survival. And until you understand that the white man is fighting for genetic survival on the face of this planet, you will never be able to truly understand what it is you have to do to stand against that. Because if they ease up on their oppression for just a few years, if they stop with the imprisonment and with the chemical warfare, the drugs and the alcohol that they have so readily available, And if just for a few years, everybody in the country would be half black and half Mexican and half this and half that. And inside of a century, there wouldn't be any more white people. And if you magnify that by how many black people there are, how many colored people there are on this planet, as opposed to how many white people there are on this planet, it will be a very short period of time before the planet was just of color like it used to be. You know, so I wanted to comment on the presidency as far as Trump goes. And I mean, I'm glad there are a lot of people who realize that the president is not selected, but they're elected, and we don't have a say in who's the president to this country. Nothing could possibly change a rich white man or a rich white woman being president of the United States is not going to help any more than a puppet of a so-called black man being president. So that's out the window. And children repeat what they hear and they do what they see. And those kids who done that thing, that's what they heard and that's what they saw. I agree with the caller who said it takes a certain amount of determination and will to do something like break a limb on another human being's but, you know, by all manners, those children could have just as easily shared candy and gave flowers to that kid, man. It's about what you hear and about what you see. So, you know, I would like everybody to keep in mind there's always a way to fight against white supremacy. If you're doing a radio show like the brother's doing, or if you actively getting suited and booted and joining or starting up some kind of organization, some kind of militant organization, which sole purpose is to defend your people against the system of white supremacy, or to whichever of those extremes that you go to, just do something, because they 24/7, 365 are trying to figure out ways that they can kill the black man. And they have to do this, because if they don't, eventually they won't be able to exist on the face of this earth. So keep in mind, the white man is fighting for genetic survival. And in order to be racist, the black queen, Frances Cress Welsing, teaches us you must have supremacy plus power. Therefore, it's not possible for a black man to be racist in America, because we don't have any supremacy and we don't have any power. So kudos to the brother, man, for doing your show how you do. Black folks, keep in mind that you live under a system of white supremacy. And while I think it's a bit much to say that we just need to kill them all, then because I'm like, my response to that is like, what are you, European? Like, what are you, white or something? You're just going to kill everybody of a whole race? And what we need to do is integrate with, so that we can more easily outbreed them. I'm Coach Jackson. My name is Jacque Shabazz. Peace and blessings, my people.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody on the line. This is 1842. I had a couple of notes, and then I would like to share a brief story, so I'll try to be concise. During the alt-right bit that we listened to, it was interesting that, I don't know the woman's name, but she said, not just racist, but aggressively racist. For me, that, I don't know if that's code or something, but what it points out is, for me, they're all suspected racists, if not just racist. And it doesn't really matter whether someone is outright or more refined and so forth. So just something like she did say, and I was just like, oh, that's wonderful that that's mentioned. To the piece with the boy with the broken arm, as Beth says all the time, racist man, racist woman, racist child. There's no coincidence. I also am a little disturbed that I believe that was a non-white male that spoke and said that to ask parents to be mindful. I believe that that's just another level of refinement if they're mindful about what they say in front of the kids. And that also just shows a little bit of our ignorance to think that this is passive, that it's just the parents are talking and the child is just around and hears it. I would like to assert that parents are actively teaching their children this. These white parents are teaching their children this, having conversations with their children. This isn't like an accident, like the child just happened to hear it. Because when we talk about it, we make it seem like that's what's happening. But I don't think that that's really what's going on. And I think it's, you know, I didn't know that the same school had a noose hung in the boys' bathroom. I'll insert my story here. I went to the Great National Black on Wax Museum in Baltimore, Maryland today. If anybody is in the DMV area, please, please, please go see this museum. It is 100 times better than the Smithsonian. I'm underfunded, so support it, but just better in every way. On the bottom level, there's a lynching exhibit. The whole bottom level is for that. And so I was down there, and a group of black gentlemen come in, and there's like a little boy. I'm in the back, so I don't see them, but I hear the little boy ask, who I presume to be a father, could have been an uncle, I don't know, an older black man. The first thing he says is, I'm scared. And it immediately caught my attention, and I just tuned into him. He says, I'm scared. And the older black man, like, doesn't say anything. And they just continue to walk and walk, and then they come around. And in the exhibit, I'll make sure to post the pictures to Bess's page. If people, I took a lot of pictures, so I'll put them up there. But I'll note this one in case people want to see. But there's a wax exhibit of Mary Turner and her husband. And the story is that they accused the husband of doing something and went to lynch him. Mary was like, he ain't do it. Y'all know he didn't do it. And they said, oh, well, we coming after you. They hung her up and saw that her belly was moving, cut open the belly, and her unborn child, she was like in her 8th month, so the child was, not like just a little fetus. And they stomped the child as they, then burned everybody and continued with their lynching process. Look it up. I'm giving a very brief synopsis of what happened to Mary Turner and her family. The little boy says, ask the older gentleman, do they still do that now? And there was like at least a 5-second pause. And I wanted him to tell the truth, and he said no. And I noted that and then continued, viewing the exhibit, and I made my way up to another floor. And they were also on that floor. And the little boy was standing by himself, thankfully, and was staring at an exhibit of a older white KKK member in the whole white garb. And he has a noose around a little black boy and I think like a chain around the little black girl. And he's just staring, And so I like gently make my way over to him and I kind of, do this thing, like rock back and forth for a little bit. And then I just ask him, I said, what do you think about that? And he says, well, in a very small voice, he was mesmerized. Like, he just couldn't stop staring because the little boy is his height. Like, they look alike. And because it's a wax museum, so, And I said, well, what do you think about that? And he says, well, that man, and he points to the KKK member, is mean for doing that and treating them that way. And I said, you seem to be about the same age as the little boy, and, y'all are about the same height. And I said, how do you feel about that? Like, what do you think about that? And he looks down and, he becomes completely introverted, looks down. He was introverted to begin with, real shy to talk to me. Looks down and he's like, kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, and kind of then walks away from me. I couldn't chase him down. And I just said, I just noted it. I wanted to see what that interaction could unfold. But I maintain that we must stop lying to the children. It doesn't matter. I don't have kids. I'll put that out there. I can't say what people should and should not do with their children, but I don't think that it is productive or constructive to not be having true conversations. I'm tying it in. Let me wrap it up because I know I've probably reached my limit. If a little boy can hang a noose in a bathroom at a school, then that's like, there's no reason that, about the same age range, that little boy is not having a conversation with the older people in his life that, hey, this is a real thing. This is not a game. And throughout the entire beginning part of the broadcast, all I kept hearing was lynching, 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 lynching. I mean, to me, it's like a real short skit when you're running people over cars to tying them up with rope and dragging them by cars, which is a part of lynching as well. I'll mute myself at this point, but I did want to share that because in this broadcast, I heard a lot about lynching. And I'm over here in Virginia, So it definitely has me aware, not to say that it won't happen, it can't happen anywhere, but I think these white people have missed being able to do that. They're talking about it. It's like they miss it. And I would not be surprised to see a rise in the lynching. Because the police shootings are a type of lynching, but to see it just the old school. With that, I'll mute myself. If I have a chance to come back in, I will. Thank you for taking my call.
Other folks that we haven't heard from, feel free. I have been told they didn't do too much lynching of niggers in Virginia, so you should feel relatively safe, because they just didn't do a whole lot of that. Other folks that we haven't heard from, did you have commentary?
Hello? Oh, yeah, go ahead, man. Sorry about that.
Appreciate that. Thank you, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. Gus, I just wanted to mention that I don't know if you remember that case from up in, I think it was the New York area, the UAlbany, the three black females. Like, I think it was a group of black people made this documentary called Indefensible, if you wanted to look that up. I had saw it last weekend. I thought it was very interesting because it seemed like they put a lot more of it in context in regards to, like, the evidence that they could be trying to keep away from the public. Like, with the interview, they did, like, a police interrogation interview with the three females, and they were able to give their side of the story, like, as, you know, as what happened before all of the chaos and the confrontation, the physical part started to happen. And apparently, I think it was alcohol involved with one of the white females. And to make a long story short, the white female apparently attacked one of the black females. But the news media in that area has been portraying it as though they made it out to be something that was false, a so-called hoax. But that's to be expected with the deceitful nature of white supremacists. But to touch on some other things from the audio segments, I noticed that I think the guy that was being interviewed, he was making, like, those comparisons. Like, I can understand why you made mention about metaphors. It seemed like he made, like, a comparison about, like, family. Like, well, you know, like, I care about my people, and it's just like caring about my family and no other children. I think he used the word children. Now, like, that was real interesting that that's what he said, because he didn't say, like, no other families. He said, it's like caring about my family and no other children. So what he meant to say, in my opinion, was non-white people are children and white people are family. So, and as far as the Richard Spencer guy, like, I did catch that interview with Roland Martin, and I could definitely tell he was practicing racism. He was manipulating another victim's confusion by making him use terms like American and, you know, people being German and Nazi. And he asked the guy, well, you know, did you have any family relatives that were in World War II? And he said, yes. He said, I had two grandfathers that was in the military conflict. And he says, well, would they find the Nazi salutes at that event fun and exuberant? And then Richard says, yes, they would. So it was like, what, really? And they're Americans? And, you know, just like the use of words, using American, which can make people use that word white nationalists, and just not using the clear terms and not providing definitions, can be very fatal to non-white people's understanding of racism. And that's all I have for right now. And thank you very much.
The documentary that was mentioned about the University of Albany students. I don't know if folks remember that, but this got a good bit of attention. Even Hillary Clinton commented on this incident. This was like the beginning of the year. There were three black female students. They were on a bus late. I think it was on a weekend, like a Saturday night. They reported that some white people, I think it was mostly white males, but it was on a bus. They reported that they were attacked. They made racial comments. They had video on the bus. About, I don't know, a week or so after a period of time passed, they ended up saying that the video showed that what the black students charged did not happen, that they had lied and filed a false report. And so they ended up charging them with making a false report, and it was supposed to go through the court proceedings. There were school disciplinary punitive measures taken as well in terms of expelling the students or making them leave the University of Albany for a period of time. Got a good bit of attention the early part of the year. You can download that documentary, Indefensible, online, and I'll correspond with them, see if maybe we can get the filmmakers on the program. I think that was our caller in Alabama. You were going to comment as well, sir?
Yes, I was. I found it interesting how the sheriff of the town, either the chief of police, was a victim of racism, had racist slurs spray painted on the building, house behind him. How he said that it could have been a prank, you know, and at the same time you played another clip. Well, the white supremacists, I don't call them white nationalists because, to me, I know the word colonialism is against me the fullest code, but America is colonized by, you know, Europeans and Caucasians. But, and I do believe in the code more so than anything, but I'm just stating the obvious that, you know, that the white nationalist group, alt-right, they also said that their Nazi salute was a prank. So going from alt-right saying that their racist tactics were a prank and the chief of police saying that the racist slurs that were spray painted on the building was a prank, It kind of tied things together for me, and kind of, you know, made a little more sense. We kind of put things in perspective, you know, a little bit for me. But I already look at it like white people are racist. That's just how I look at it. You know, good white people and whatever, however you want to chop it up and dice it. But another thing I also wanted to add. I was listening to Yvette Carnell sometimes from Breaking Brown, and I'm not gonna lie, oh man, she be getting on my nerves sometimes. But then I listen to her, and then I kind of understand it more, and then I'll be like, you know what I'm saying? So at first it'll get on my nerves, but then when I kind of understand her viewpoint a little better, it'll you know, educate me on things that I'm not too educated on. You see what I'm saying? And She had a video where she was talking about Donald Trump and his views on illegal immigration, and is it beneficial for black people, African Americans, descendants of slaves, to be against illegal immigration? I mean, to be pro illegal immigration, is that really our fight? You know, and I don't know. I wonder, like, have you ever had her on your program? And the reason I asked, because while I was looking at the video, so I know both of y'all are very intelligent. You see what I'm saying? I think it would be very constructive to hear dialogue between the two of you. You see what I'm saying? I'm just wondering, have she ever been on your program? And if not, I'm just making a humble request if you could take that into consideration. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
She has not been a guest on the program at this point, but request duly noted. Did we have other folks that we have not heard from who had commentary they wanted to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is the caller from Florida. I just wanted to briefly comment on the festivities here as far as the holiday and, of course, some of the stuff that's been going on in the news. Like the other callers, I think, have touched on the wording that a lot of both the media as well as the supposed alt-right group that's coming out with. I purposely now just say white supremacy because I just feel that the media, whether they want to say it or not, it may come out later on in the wash. They're just trying to push this and make it as normalized as possible, as well as, you know, trying to normalize, you know, the fact that, you know, Donald Trump's campaign ran off of the notion of, you know, racism, you know, talking illy of minorities or mainly black people and stuff like that. The other thing that seems to be consistently glossed over, and I'm even having to have conversations with members in my family about, is even after the election results had came in, you know, I had some family members trying to put the election squarely to blame on black people that voted for Trump, even with the numbers and the stats being told to them. I began, like, you know, sharing articles and just, you know, making sure that I speak to people around me, or at least just not immediately, my immediate family, to those that I want to speak to, because I'm not really at this point trying to reach too many people right now, because I just think it's everybody's for themselves. But nonetheless, I think we shouldn't lose sight of the role that white females have played into this and reaffirming the fact that they work in contingent with white men in this system. And so, yeah, I don't use the word alt-right. I just say white supremacy, at least if I'm in a discussion with a white person. I'm not willing to use these new terms and stuff because I just see them as just trying to just normalize it, to brush it up under the table and provide them with a platform to be able to even appear and speak, because never heard of the guy before until now, and now it just seems like he's a household name, so I don't want to feed into it. But I'll meet my line.
Right on. Good job, folks, being alert with the terms that are being used. Were there other folks that we have not heard from? Any other people that we have missed completely have commentary? Oh, we got everybody. That is outstanding. Oh, go ahead. We missed anybody? Anybody that we have not heard from at all? Okay. We have one person that wrote in, and then if people have additional comments that they would like to share, we can make time for that as well. So this person wrote in. They said that they might be listening, might not be able to listen live, so I'll just read, and then if they want to share any additional tidbits or pieces of info that were left out of their report, they can do so. Or if people have any questions, if they're listening live and want to field any questions, they can make time to do that also. So they said, they're writing to report on what happened with the holidays. This incident has only served to emphasize the importance of, one, documentation. I guess she had a resident or someone close to her resident who was complaining about noise. Number two, sobriety is best, even in your own home. I feel like some moron says that all the time. Number three, we have to protect ourselves. I did receive a temporary protective order that will likely become permanent. Below is what happened. I wrote it the same day while it was still fresh in my memory. If I am able, I will try to call into the program this evening. Okay. At approximately 9:28, my doorbell rang on the night of Thanksgiving, so that's 2 days ago, Thursday. My cousin and her son had arrived 5 minutes earlier from Philadelphia. I looked through the peephole and saw the neighbor. I opened the door and he said, "Can you keep down the bumping and jumping?" I responded, "No one is bumping and jumping. Have a good night." I proceeded to shut my door and he kicked the door open as I was closing it. This forced the door open and he moved toward me as though he was going to enter my home. I used my shoulder and body weight to force the door closed. I then opened the door and said, "Have you lost your effing mind? Don't you ever kick my door and try to come into my home." I'm cleaning that up a little bit. I then shut the door and locked it. He continued to angrily kick my front door, which I could hear as I made my way up the steps. I yelled to call 911, call the police. I told the children to stay upstairs and not come down. I was shaking, my hands were shaking, and my heart was racing. Once I reached my kitchen, I called 911 and spoke to the dispatcher. My fingers were trembling while I dialed 911. I related what had just happened and requested that the police come to my residence. She asked if there were any weapons used, if anyone was in the house that shouldn't be. Where did he go? Did he arrive by car? She also asked for a physical description, and I described him and what he was wearing. She said officers had been dispatched. The officers arrived within 10 to 15 minutes of the incident. There were two of them, a tall white male officer and a petite brunette Latina. She informed me that everything is being recorded. They asked me what happened. And I told them, I said, "It's completely unacceptable for him to do that. Kick in my door. I am a woman." The male officer said, "Woman or not, he cannot do that to anyone." The female officer continued to talk with me in my downstairs entryway while my cousin sat and listened on the steps. The white male officer went to talk to the neighbor. She asked me if I knew his name. I related to her. The male officer didn't get his name. Asked the neighbor to tell him what happened. He said, if you could use your mute button, that would be super helpful. If you know you're on a line and you're shifting and moving around, I try to open up people's lines if they put a hand up, but if you're just moving around and making noise, we just pick up all that and it just becomes distortion. Okay, so back to it. So the male officer, he goes to speak with the terrorist neighbor. So the male officer asked the neighbor to tell him what happened. He said they moved in. They have two children. It sounds like they are doing karate all day. The male officer asked if he rang the bell. He said yes. I asked her to keep it down. The officer said, "What else? Did you kick her door?" He said no. The male officer said, "I don't believe you. I believe you were angry and kicked her door. You can't do that because that is burglary and it's a felony." The neighbor responds, "But she was closing the door." The officer said, "She can do that. It's her door. She could even close her door on me, and as long as she isn't committing a crime, I can't force my way in." After he finished talking to the officer, he came back into my home and said, "Did you hear that? I was talking to him just to de-escalate the situation. If it happens again, call." While talking with the female officer, she said, "I can go to the Civic Center and get a protective order. They are open 24/7. She gave me her name, badge number, and the event number. She said they don't issue reports for incidents like this. I asked if that would prevent him from talking to me and ringing my bell. She said based on the information I provide, that will determine the type of order. I am a single parent of two boys, 10 and 11. This is one of many interactions with this individual since I purchased this home during the summer. Just to give you some context, on the day of settlement, he rang the bell twice to complain of noise. We hadn't even moved our belongings into the house. I do see this as an escalation and will continue to be vigilant and try to stay safe. I know that he has some sort of issue that requires a caseworker. I plan to notify them as well. This was from Thanksgiving. Now, the sobriety portion, she mentioned that. I don't know if he was under the influence or if just in my victimization, I spaced on that a bit where the alcohol came in. But even if no one in her residence had consumed anything or this guy or whatever, I can only imagine if someone is under the influence and this happens, that making this situation way worse to deal with. Even if you're propped up, you're chilling, you're in your own house, and you can legally, you could have your alcohol. You could be now, you could be in California or Washington or Oregon, and you could legally have your cannabis and be chilling, whatever, who cares? But we're still in a system of racism, white supremacy, and at any moment, the war could end up not just being on your doorstep, in your very living room. I would just say, number one, I think it's phenomenal. She did an outstanding job of being able to get that door closed and just not allowing, you know, the suspense of the whole situation and it coming out of nowhere to have her so rattled that she couldn't go ahead and get that door closed and locked and then going to call the police again. I hope that she follows up and gets that report and even follow up with the police, because I have found that they can be very lackadaisical in dealing with black people when we are the victims, when they don't get to go and put 50 cases on us and have us in greater confinement for the next 20 years. When it's not that, then they're very, you know, lazy. Like, we have no real interest in trying to pursue justice. We just kind of meander through this whole process. So I've seen that. So I would be very vigilant with them. I don't know if you have what type of security you have at your residence, if you have a firearm or if you have cameras or anything so you can kind of keep a better eye. But I would take that sort of thing very seriously. And my suspicion, like you were saying, we don't know about this racist mental state. I think Roz has commented before about whites, they take so many drugs and whatever else. We don't even know what could be going on there. I would take it extremely seriously. It's been my experience that whites, they tend to keep a grudge about this sort of thing. Like, this becomes a vendetta for life. As long as this person lives there or as long as you live there, I would talk to your children about it so that they can be extremely codified and take this seriously, to be mindful if they see this guy, if anything seems off, if it looked like something might have been left at the residence, a note or anything like that, to just take it extremely seriously, how you want them to respond, what you want them to do. If you have other family that are in your town, let them know about it. This is the sort of thing I would not minimize at all. And I think we had a program a little over a year and a half ago. We had a black female. She didn't have children, but she lived by herself. And she was being terrorized. She had it was more than one white person. They lived right around her, and they would deliberately make noise to keep her awake at night and just be threatening and rowdy with her. And she lived by herself. And so we talked about this situation there as well. But I would take it extremely seriously for your safety, firearm, whatever else you need. And I would call the police. I would not give it a second thought. Anything happens where you don't feel safe, if he comes back, if he calls, if he knocks, whatever the case is, I would call enforcement officials immediately. And if you have other people that you trust, if you would feel better having a witness or other people there just to provide support, not thinking enforcement officials are going to, you know, necessarily look out for your best interest, I would call them as well so you can have all the backup and support that you need. Did any other folks have comments or questions around this incident? Suggestions, I would say, having to deal with this sort of thing.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Gus, I must say I agree with you. Don't take that lightly at all. White people are terroristic. They do not forget. And if they feel that them as white supremacists did not get over on you the way that they're supposed to, they'll be very vindictive. So I totally agree with you on that. If you might have any neighbors that you are cool with, that you might be friendly with, I would also just touch base with them too, to have them, you know, watch over your place whenever they're home. So that way, if he does come at a time when you're not there, and let's say he does leave a note or he writes nigger on your door or something like that, at least you might have the eyes of other people that might be able to bear witness to these incidences when you're not home. You should probably talk to your children and come up with different scenarios in case he does try things, as far as giving them different things they can try to protect themselves. If you have any, I don't know if the house has multiple exits, so if he does somehow come into the house while you're not there, if your children are old enough to be at home by themselves, that they have a contingency plan on how to leave, leave from one of the other exits. If you have a neighbor, if they can run to that neighbor for assistance, just come up with contingency plans. And again, like I said, if there's anything you have that you might be able to utilize to protect yourself, and also maybe give your children insight into, you know, how to use 911 if they don't know, things of that nature, so that that way if they happen to be in a situation where they're by themselves and they encounter this person, that they'll be able to, you know, have some idea on what to do, because a lot of times children get can just become like basically they can freeze in the midst of an emergency situation simply because they're too young to process these sorts of things. So it's very good to maybe practice, maybe have some drills where you guys practice these things so that way they can get used to it. So if, God forbid, something does happen in that situation, they won't freeze. They'll go back to the memory of, hey, you know, I remember mom, you know, walking us through these drills or whatever the case may be, and now I'm just going to put those things into action. Thank you, and I'll meet my line.
Can I be heard?
Let's get retired firefighter, then we'll nab everybody else.
What was just reported, I think, was good advice. My mind was thinking over worst case scenario, the use of possible deadly force. In most places, there is something that is coined and phrased, and it's a metaphor, but I'm not, it's not nothing that I adopted. It's called like a castle law. Like you do not have to retreat from your place of residence. Which means if she is or becomes the owner of a firearm, just shoot right through the door. Just shoot right through the door prior to having the police coming, you know, as far as that concerned, because that's actually is an invasion of your home. And as I mentioned before, there's two places in most areas in this part of the world. You don't have to retreat from your place of business or your home, unless I'm mistaken, most places. And so find out what the law is, and if, you know, worst case scenario, especially you in there with your children, ladies, enact it if you have the opportunity. Thank you.
Hang on 1 second, Ken Steele. We had some people that we hadn't heard from at all. I'm going to just get those two, and then you'll be the first person we nab after they finish. The two people that dialed in, I think this is Lady in New York and a caller from a block number. Did you all have commentary?
Yes, can I be heard?
You are a little low, if you could speak up.
Okay, I hope that's better.
Much better.
Hello to everyone on the line. I did have some comments about what the female who wrote in was going through with her neighbor, and then just wanted to discuss some of the things that happened over Thanksgiving. So about this incident with her police report, because they don't want to give it to you in hand, they want to give you some number, you have to go a few days later. If there's any miswording or anything that you feel is pertinent that's left out, please have them amend the report. They may want to do it. They may not. Ask to speak to a supervisor if they don't want to. But even if, I remember telling them this. Why didn't they put this part in? Or if they don't put in some of the things that he said, because he pretended to not have understanding that he could not barge his way into your home or force himself to have the door open to continue the conversation with you, make sure they amend it and put that in. Definitely would suggest trying to get some type of security cameras, alarms. These things are not that expensive anymore, depending on what your budget is like, but you can get a very modern security system that includes at least two cameras for like $200, and that also could include window alarms. You could buy extra window alarms if you have a lot of windows. But I would get those things. And I would check with your county or your city, municipality, and see who owns the home that your neighbor is staying in? Is it his? If it's not, try to find out, because where I am in New York, when you look it up, it's right online. You just have to register with an email. But you can look up, I can look up who owns my neighbor's home, how much their taxes are. All of those things are right online. I don't even have to pay to get a printout of that. So you can do that. And if it's not him, because his name should be on the report, you can send the either the copy of the report or the restraining order or order of protection, however it's termed, to the owner and say, listen, this person you're renting to is a problem. He's bringing down your property value. He's violent. He's just not good for the neighborhood. If he's the owner and you have some type of homeowners organization, you can make them aware as well. Definitely talk to your children about safety and be on alert with them being targets of his harassment and misconduct, because he can try to lash out at them instead, because, you know, he's angry that you're taking these steps to protect yourself. And definitely come up with an escape plan just in case he tries to come. You know, if he's coming to the front door and kicking it down, what do you want the kids to do? So those are all things, because white people are, they get extremely enraged and violent when you try to protect yourself and prevent them from doing harm. I mean, with him just trying to barricade himself in the door because you tried to close it, you know, you have to think about where his mind would be with you saying, oh, yeah, I mailed the homeowners association. I mailed your landlord. You're crazy. And I want you away from, I want you to move. So he could escalate, and you have to have that in mind. So I hope that that will be helpful advice to her. As far as this Thanksgiving, there was definitely some anti-blackness. I don't do the big celebrations. I usually just go see my father because, you know, he's just by himself, so I go see him. And sometimes I may visit one more person, but, like, really quick. There was that, and it's just something that I'm trying to get over myself and not do, and sometimes I find myself slipping into it. It's almost like the conversation always steers that way versus talking about racism, white supremacy. So this Thanksgiving, my dad declared that we are not African. We're black, but we're not African. We're kind of different. And so I said, yeah, but people in the next town are kind of different, but we're still African. Like, we have different, you know, cultural things, there's no doubt, but, you know, we're still African. So there was a little bit of that. There was a little bit of the, you know, Africans don't like us, Jamaicans don't like us. And I'm like, nobody likes anybody. You know, that's, so we had that brief conversation, and then it just kind of ended. And I was just kind of able to, like, turn it to what the goal was, which was fixing something on the computer. About the guest with the black male patriarchy, I do not believe there's a such thing as black male patriarchy. I had fell into that as a female who has had quarrels with black men in the past of when I first heard this whole notion, thinking, yes, yes, they could do that. They are. And I had to think about it, like, you know, there can't be, this can't be the white male's so-called patriarchy and a black male's, like, which, if there's one, is dominant over the other. You know, like, both of them can't have all the power. And then I could just continue to think, and I said, you know, the only real power that black men and black women and children have across the board is the power to get into the wrong thing. So I really just don't understand the concept and the notion of, well, if a black male makes more or mistreats or doesn't come and give his money, and I'm not saying she said that, it's just an argument that I've heard before, doesn't come, give his money to black women and marry a black woman, then he's asserting his patriarchy. And I'm like, no, that has nothing to do with it. Most likely he still has to answer, regardless, to someone who's white, even if he has his own business. There, I mean, I just don't see how it makes sense that black men are have their own subculture of patriarchy and are exerting some type of mistreatment or power over other black people. It doesn't add up to me. Maybe I'm just not smart enough or intelligent enough to get the whole concept. And lastly, the crime that, or the attacks on black children are really escalating. I can honestly say that I'm starting to have some anxiety as a mother, because I am heavily contemplating enrolling my kids back in school. But because it's like this is always on social media, it's in the news, you know, friends and family are talking about how their kids are being mistreated in school and out of school, in particular by other white children or white adults. I'm, like, completely scared, but there's a part of me where I'm like, I really need to put them in school. So this is really affecting me, you know, all this stuff on the media, and I'm just trying to see how I'm going to deal with it and prepare my children to deal with it, especially my son, who has been in preschools, but he's never been in actual school. And my oldest child has been in school, but she doesn't want to go back to the charter schools, where it's completely different. Like, they're snapping fingers at kids, like, look here, look there, look at me. And it's almost like treating them like pets, and they, like, throw them a piece of candy. And so she is now getting older and understands that that's not a reward. Like, that's, she calls it where they treat her like their little doggy. So she doesn't want to go back. So I'm just trying to deal with that, and then hope that none of these incidents occur to my own children. So that's how things are going this week. And I'll mute my line.
The caller from a block number, did you have commentary you were going to share?
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the other callers. It's Karma. I live in a very isolated area, and my best friend has been lights. We have invested in lights, and these lights have kept us very safe. The people who are bad people, they don't like to do anything in the light. So I suggest that you just light your home up at night and then put the blackout blinds up. So, also, I've been debating, you know, everyone has weapons, but, you know, do you want to be registered with the government that you have weapons? You know, it seems like you would hate for them to know that you have weapons. You would rather them be wonder if you have weapons. And but having looked at it historically, do white people, is it better? I mean, do you get better, do you get more cautious behavior out of white people if they know you have weapons, or if they don't know whether you have weapons? And looking at what happened to Omar Gaddafi after he surrendered his weapons, then that's when they went in and, you know, attacked this country. And also the same thing with Saddam Hussein. When he surrendered his weapons, that's when they attacked his country. But when they know you have weapons, like, you know, North Korea and possibly Cuba, then they stay back. So So I think that I'm going to go for the open carry license, and that's why I'm doing it. I think white people will respond better, if that's how you can describe it, when they know that you have weapons. As far as Kanye West, I think I already explained to everyone how something really awful was happening when Deputy Goforth was apparently killed by Mr. Sean, gosh, I can't remember his name, but whatever that was, they don't want it out in the light of day. Whatever it was, the judge quit the case and then hired a lawyer just because she said, no one can make me tell why I'm quitting the case. And then the investigators quit the case. And finally they decided that the gentleman who was accused of shooting Deputy Goforth, he's just not mentally sound. He can't handle a trial. They put him in a mental institution, and we will never know what happened, and we will never hear from him again. And I think that we'll never hear from Kanye West again. I think he's gone. Last but not least, you know, I've been working on this local politics thing for the last 2 years, trying to stay away from the upper politics that, you know, we have no control over, but just trying to get a new sheriff and everything. And it was so awful. It was just so awful. I got people, black people, to run, and they had the right ideas, and the Republicans immediately came over and seduced them all. And the Republicans started having fundraisers for the black people who were running as Democrats, and they just told them they were so wonderful, and they stopped campaigning with black people, and they just went and campaigned with white people. And so when the election came, no one voted for them, and even the white Republicans, because I have a mathematical algorithms, even the white Democrats voted for Trump. So, I mean, the ones who said they were white Democrats, and it was just, it was awful. I mean, the Republicans just totally just seduced these black candidates because they were new, they were untried, and I mean, they had their noses just, I mean, they, that's a metaphor. I mean, they just, they fell for it. They just fell for it. And it was just ugly to behold. But I can say this, after the election of Donald Trump, I have seen an exponential rise in interest and local participation by black people in local politics. Just this quickly. So that's the good note I'm going to end on.
Hang on, Mr. Steele. We had one other person we hadn't heard from. The caller is 6935. Did you have commentary? 6935.
Yes, I do. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, first I want to say greetings to everybody. I hope everybody enjoyed their holiday. I want to shout out to the Muslim brother who's in the audience this evening. It's so refreshing to hear someone with such passion as he is and understand about, you know, white supremacy. And, you know, when I first came to this forum, I had some idea, but not to the extent that you do, because I know in your religion, a lot of people from the Islamic religion definitely has a very good grasp of white racism superiority. So I say kudos to you, brother. And also you talked about Francis Quest Welsing. I know you were new to the platform because Mr. Gus Renegade is just the number one fan of Francis Quest Welsing. We know her so, so well. He keeps us updated, I would say, every week about her. And I'm so happy that I had an opportunity to speak to her before she passed. With respect to the woman who's in the house with the two kids, this man is a predator. He's been watching her because I believe that if there was a man around, not to say that I, you know, people might say, oh, well, whatever, but I believe if there was a man in that household, he wouldn't have came and banged in on that door. He must know that she lives alone with those two kids. What I would advise her, she has some type of male figure to come in there and change the schedule up because he is definitely lurking. He knew when to come there and bother her. He would not have done that, I don't think, and you guys can correct me, I may be wrong, if there would have been a male figure coming to that door. She needs to make sure there's a male figure around just to kind of throw, because sometimes white men feel there's no male around. They can feel they can do as they please. They're more apprehensive if there's a male figurehead there. So, and that's basically all that I have to say. I'm just saying this guy, he's a predator. He's watching her. Thank you very much.
Did want to get in also for the female listener, the mother, black mother, who wrote in with that situation. When you write this up and the language that you use, when you talk to enforcement officials, I don't know if you call the property manager or anyone else involved in this manner, I would be sure to use the terms violence, that this perpetrator came over and behaved in a terroristic manner on your property. Predatory manner, I mean, I would use really strong words. I would not allow them, because I've seen this be a pattern where they use language to try to minimize what he did and just say he got a little frustrated and, you know, knocked aggressively or something like that. I would use the most aggressive language possible, and I would continue to remind that he did this with your children present. Mr. Steele, did you have commentary, sir?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that everybody has some okay sessions. I just want to remind the listener that wrote in that recently a 15-year-old boy was killed by a 62-year-old suspected white supremacist. I don't want to call any names. But a 15-year-old black boy was killed by a 62-year-old white man. The behavior that was exhibited in the story that was
are you still not hearing Mr. Steele? Are you there, Mr. Steele? Are you there, Mr. Steele? Not hearing him? I'm not sure what happened to Mr. Steele. I'm not hearing him. If it was something wacky, it looked like something happened on the dial pad. If you can hear us, Mr. Steele, or you can hear me, Mr. Steele, I'm not hearing you. If you want to hang up and dial back in, I can just open your line back up and we can get you on. But I'm not hearing you, Mr. Steele. All right. I think we might have had two other people that dialed in kind of late. Did you all have commentary? Anybody that we missed that dialed in more recently that we have not heard from?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with the last female caller. I believe if a male is just randomly appearing, that will put that guy on alert. White people are extremely nosy, and they do tend to follow people's schedule. Your work schedule, whatever, like if you're running errands, they tend to like keep tabs on you. So if a gentleman just randomly appear, whether it's an uncle, brother, whatever, like maybe park his car on a different block and walk up, or just like randomly be in the house, stuff like that, and he see him, that might keep him a little bit distant. Also, I'm a good advocate of people, especially black people, having firearms. I'm familiar with the Castle Doctrine. I do know with the Castle Doctrine that you have to barricade yourself and the furthest away from the entryway, and at least give warnings to the person. Me personally, I wouldn't give any warnings. I'll just go in the furthest room, and then when they get close to that room, I just let off a few rounds, and I'll also have the police on a line just to let them know that someone has entered my home and I am been attacked. That way she can cover herself. And then also as far as open carry, I would never open carry. Some people do, but just me being a black male, I think that could bring too much attention to myself. So open carry I wouldn't do. And also, I mean, if I was going to do something to you and I see that you have a firearm on you, it doesn't mean that I'm not going to attack you. That just means that I have to come with a different approach. And lastly, I believe in 2010 or 2011, actually, I'm the caller in Pennsylvania from Jersey. My nephew was 7 years old at the time. And my mom said that he used to play with the neighbors. The neighbors were two white kids. And he was told that by one of the younger kids around his age that some other kid didn't want to play with him because he was black. My mom overheard it, and she told me it. And at that time, I was ignorant, so I was shocked. And it was, like, pretty hard to believe that kids had a understanding of racism at that age. So if you have kids, I don't have kids. I have a lot of nieces and nephews. I try to encourage my brothers to, like, listen to the cows or teach their kids. Some people say I shouldn't do it, even though my brothers and my sisters, they don't agree with my view. But I just try to teach my nephews and nieces whatever I can, because I know in the long run, it's the right thing to do, and I'm going to save their lives by being suspicious of white kids or white people in general. And if you have kids, please just, you know, try to teach them as much as you can about racism, because we're all targets, and I'll meet my line.
I will say this week you all did hear, because people commented about the number of reports that about children being attacked and all the things that have happened. There were more reports because so many of them were small. I think this compensatory call-in had more individual audio reports than most of them, but there were a ton. That's why I just said I'm just going to play, you know, as many of them as possible, because there were a lot of those, and that's not even all. There were more incidents like that happening both in schools and just random citizens, even older victims, unfortunately. Mr. Steele, I think, should be back with us. Are you there, Mr. Steele?
Yes. I'm just having audio issues. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
We can hear you. We can hear you, Mr. Steele. Can you hear us? We can hear you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you. I'm not sure if you're having some tech issues, but we can hear you.
Hello?
I will message Mr. Steele, because apparently he is not able to hear us. I'll message him and let him know whatever audio issues he's having are continuing. I did also want to say, in case people missed it, I know your memory might have failed you, so you might not remember. And then I know also some people are not able to pick up the lyrics that are being said in a song, if it's the first time they're hearing it or what have you. The very last song that played with Kanye West before, when we were doing the news clips, where he talks about the loss of his mother and how that impacted his mental health, and he mentioned suicide. I just did not want that to be lost, that is the second time in 30 days that we've had a song played by a prominent black artist where they were talking about their own bouts with suicide. Just when we talk about black mental health, it is a major problem. And I also just wanted to add Kanye West, who has come out and said that we need to stop talking about racism, and said, you know, his other comments. Lil Wayne has come out and said that racism isn't that big of an issue. Both of these individuals have done songs publicly where they have talked about or suggested their own bouts with suicide. That is a correlation, put it that way. We have other comments. Folks wanted to make sure they get in. We have about 15 minutes left before we conclude the program. Any other comments folks wanted to make sure they got in?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing. The caller for Mr. Steele, he touched on it greatly about the open carry situation. I just like to say, in a combat situation, which you like being a victim of crime, you are in a combat situation, whether you get a chance to defend yourself or not, you know. But in a combat situation, the strongest weapon that you possess is the element of surprise. A robber, and this is not even in the context of racism and white supremacy. I'm just talking about just everyday life. You know, a robber can see you. And if they're really a robber and really a criminal, and they see that you're open carry person, they will just shoot you first and take what's left off of your body. So the strongest weapon that a person seeking justice has is their element of surprise. And I like to mute my line. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes,
oh,
sir.
Sorry. Hello? Okay. I just wanted to... where did I cut off? Oh.
Your line still sounds like it's breaking up a little bit, Mr. Steele. I don't know if you are in a bad area with bad reception or if it's a tech issue.
Just a second here. Can I be heard now? Is that better?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. Where was I? Where did my audio cut out last time?
Didn't really get started. You can start from scratch.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say that I heard the suggestions by the previous callers regarding the situation of the homeowner having one of their neighbors approach them. And I just wanted to say that the suggestions that I heard tonight were great. I especially like the one speaking about having lights installed. I think that's a very easy, simple solution that's very actionable. You can go to Home Depot and get some security lights tomorrow. But more importantly, I think it should be mentioned that this situation that was outlined could easily result in a fatal encounter. You have to be aware that in the news, it's been reported that there has been an uptick in violent attacks on black children. A black person understand that, hey, they are targets now, and they're being attacked. I believe there was a story of a 15-year-old black child who was killed by a 62-year-old white man, and the black child, I believe, only merely bumped into him, reportedly. So that was all that it took to set this white person off into a homicidal rage. So that should be noted. And because of that, I think that more black people should consider, if not getting a concealed carry weapon, they should consider getting a firearm for the household, a personal or a household defense weapon, such as a shotgun. I believe those are sold at most Walmarts. So, yeah, I mean, you could easily get one of those and have that in your closet ready to go in case your light rig does not work and does deter these people from coming to your door. You could definitely just, you know, rack a shell and have them, made very aware that you are ready to defend yourself and your home and your children. So these people need to be taken very seriously. They are not playing around, and they can be set off into a violent homicidal rage. And also, I just wanted to reiterate that suspected white supremacist children themselves are some of the deadliest practitioners of white supremacy. It's not for a second think that they are just victims themselves, or they are not agents of white supremacy, or they're acting on behalf of some other white supremacist. No, these people are studied at a young age, and they are ready to go ahead, go forth, and wreak havoc on non-white people, their peers, even at a young age. I have to reiterate this because it seems like so many victims of white supremacy do not understand this. White supremacist children are dangerous and are capable of harming and even killing you and your children. Thank you so much. I will mute my line.
Can I be heard again?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Briefly, once again on this subject matter, someone is kicking on your door. They do not just have an intent to confiscate property. They have the intent, presumably, to harm and or kill you or someone within that house. You have to use deadly force if you have the opportunity to. Prepare yourself for that. I will not wait for that person to successfully damage the door to open. I will shoot through the door. There is weaponry, and the type of ammunition that can provide you with that opportunity. On the more positive part, I have had very constructive conversation with two of my five siblings, and during times such as the quote-unquote holiday season, it's been, you know, some very constructive conversation. As Mr. Fuller says, speaking directly to the global system of what racist white supremacy in a counter-racist form, we are able to have that type of conversation with my youngest sibling, which is a female who is an enforcement official for Dade County Public Schools. And also with my eldest male sibling. We always have great conversation and understanding in sharing views and understandings. So that's always a good thing. And it just so happens, you know, during the holiday season, it just makes it even more of an opportunity to do so. So I am grateful for that. I have a lot of other people that I have conversations with, but it makes me even more gratified to be able to have it with someone that I'm biologically connected with. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
I heard two different people. The caller at 4950.
Yeah, I just wanted to get in a brief statement. All the suggestions that we were given tonight for the female that wrote in, they're excellent, but the best suggestion would be for her to take a course, firearms course. They have courses for women who do live alone, and they provide different laws within that state and city that will tell you exactly how you can handle intruders, how you should properly store firearm and ammunition. She could get all the knowledge and possibly get better training at a place like that. So that would be the best suggestion. And you can go ahead, Ross. I'm mute.
Oh, thank you, sir. I just wanted to chime in again in reference to the mother, the black female mother, and her two children. Just the main thing I like when Gus discussed using the most potent words possible to describe the situation, and the other black female who discussed that if there was any discrepancies with the way the police are reporting that incident, to make sure that they get all the information in there, because, I mean, one cop was white, so he definitely might try to protect that white person by obfuscating the facts of what took place. The main thing is just remember, like Gus said, they are predators. And when you understand that all white people are predators, you realize that predators are opportunists, predators are cunning, predators are extremely observant, and predators monitor their prey before they pounce, waiting for that opportunity in which it's optimum for them to do whatever they're planning to do to their prey. So we have to keep that in mind, and definitely I can't stress enough the importance of self-protection and also just being alert, battlefield awareness. There's a good book called Spy Secrets That Can Save Your Life, written by a former CIA agent, and it's specifically he talks about a ton of safety procedures you can take to protect yourself and your family. He also has videos on YouTube, and also he discusses battlefield awareness, how to be observant in your surroundings, how to tell if you're being followed, whether it's in a vehicle or whether it's also just in walking down the street if you're being followed by someone. So these are all techniques you definitely want to pick up on. I just wanted to put that out there. And then also, in reference to Thanksgiving, it's funny because I haven't had contact with my mother for a number of years due to racism, white supremacy, literally just imploding my family relations. And it's interesting, my son has been in touch with my mother. He's been in touch with her for a while now, even though I don't have contact with her. And he was telling me that they were discussing the election, Donald Trump, and she calls him Duck Butt Mouth because she thinks his mouth looks like a duck's backside. That's her nickname for him. And ultimately, she was discussing racism, white supremacy with my son, and she was using those terms specifically, as in racism, white supremacy. And my son actually touched base with me yesterday. He's here for the holiday. And he said to me, he said, "Dad, you know, your mother sounds just like you. Like, I said, well, I am my mother's child. But he said, no, seriously, like, just her verbiage. And she's never, like I said, we haven't discussed anything of this nature directly in a number of years. We've talked about racism, white supremacy. But in regards to her having, like, contact with the cows and things like that, that's not definitely not the case. I'm sure of that. But somewhere in there, I guess on a genetic level, she definitely understands that she understood just being an immigrant coming to this country from a country that was supposedly run by black people. This is Trinidad and Tobago. So she was acutely aware of how racism manifested itself just due to her immediate experience upon coming to this country. But just to know that she's able to use that verbiage is just refreshing for me. Maybe someplace down the road, the ancestors will open up a path for us to reconnect at some point. We've tried it before numerous times, and it's just never worked. But if that is not the case, I'm just praying that she's able to continue on that path, and maybe my son might be the conduit to help facilitate deepening her understanding of the system and how it works. Thank you. And I'll meet my line.
For sure.
Patty Hearst.
Appreciate that. Yes, ma'am.
Lastly, it's funny, I was at this rummage sale and I saw this book called The Intro to Prenatal Psychology. And I'm reading the book and it talks about how you can shape your baby in that stage, meaning, you know, we talk about the white, you know, children may not be, you know, what they can and cannot do. This is all done even before they're born. I mean, I'm thinking about my child when I was pregnant. I never said any hurtful things to this child or telling my child I want him to do this and I want you not to like these type of people and you are supreme and you know what I mean? So those thoughts are in the mind at that prenatal stage. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. One thing I did want to get in, I'll give out info for Monday's broadcast, but one thing I did want to get in, I told our guest, Professor Athena Matua, when we were talking about black male privilege, and she shared a lot of other concepts, constructive information that I appreciated when we were talking about discretion and how it applies with regards to law. We were talking about consent, some of the other things. I thought she had a lot of constructive information, even hearing some of her views on white women. But the black male privilege thing, it's not simply that I have a different view. I'm submitting that the evidence does not support what she pushed forward. And I would submit anyone who is saying that we have an issue of black male privilege, particularly once you get a definition, I don't see any evidence of black males having authority, power to do anything. I don't see black males having authority, power to keep black females from getting a job, to keep them from getting education, to do anything to them systemically, or even to do anything to improve our own lives as a black male. I do not see that. And just to be totally frank, I'm not going to be lectured and talked to and have someone dump a lot of words on me with a concept that I don't just do not support or disagree with. A concept that I think is faulty, is not supported by evidence, and is counter to the effort of ending racism, white supremacy, because it is misleading people about what is actually happening and diverting people's focus so that they will be arguing and squabbling amongst other victims about who has alleged privilege. I'm not going to listen and entertain all of that. If then I have to come back on the other hand and hear there is a problem amongst relationships because you have so many more black females who are educated, better educated, and make more money than black males. I have heard that for years. That's almost cliche when people bring up the whole relationship thing and talk about that. So I'm not going to hear, on one hand, I have to be admonished for my black male privilege because a number of black males make a little bit more money or get more jobs, and then come back on the other hand and say that I also have to hear this when we talk about the problems in black male and female relationships, a part of it being that you have a lot more black females who have better education, better jobs. That is just, it does not make sense. It's incongruent. Those two things should not be happening in the same environment. But that's what we have in the system of white supremacy. I think that's what happens when you have confusion, unless I am in error. Professor Matua, she did write me back the next day after she was a guest on the program to say she found portions of the dialogue disturbing, particularly around black male privilege, and me saying I didn't agree with that, and also submitting that it's not logical to have black male supremacy and class supremacy and black male supremacy and all these other supremacies, saying that that wasn't logical. She rejected that as well. That's fine. She's a victim of racism, white supremacy. She has her view. I have my view. The problem remains. white people, but just want to make sure I'm unequivocal on that. The whole black male privilege thing is not supported by evidence, not accurate. Moving forward, we'll be here Monday. Dr. Martin Kevorkian, admitted white supremacist, he will be back in the building. We will discuss Black Mirror, the series. It is a UK television series. It started on Channel 4, which is a British television network. It got picked up by Netflix in Season 3, which just came out a few weeks ago, kind of the late part of October. I submit. There are not very many episodes. It's a total of 3 seasons so far. There are a total of 13 episodes in 3 seasons. It's not a big series yet. I think it is growing in popularity. I submit the episodes there are about technology, right? It's a sci-fi series, and it gives all of these fictional, futuristic situations where you have all of this crazy gadgetry and computer technology and everything and how it impacts people's lives. Ostensibly, it's supposed to be great, and then you see all of these problems that could happen that were unforeseen. I submit a lot of this deals with racism. You have black characters, not a lot, but there are black characters dispersed throughout different episodes. Sometimes they're in main positions, where in my view the racism is a big factor. Sometimes they have smaller roles, but it is a fascinating series. If you want to check out any of the episodes to kind of get a feel for the show, it's bizarre because it's sci-fi and it's just a really bizarre series. It's hard to even give you a grasp of what it's about or to describe the episodes. The one that was first mentioned on this program, our caller in D.C., Jamie, she mentioned Nosedive, which is where a white female actress, the white woman, the racist white woman from The Help, she has a lot of social media problems where black people are marking her down on social media, and that ends up ruining her life. That's one you can check out, Season 3, Episode 1. I think I mentioned White Bear on the program on Friday. That's from Season 2, where it's a non-white female. It's so bizarre, I can't even describe it. That is, I think, the most disturbing episode I've seen in the series is White Bear. That's from Season 2, Episode 1. And then the start of this whole series, Episode 1, a white man is blackmailed into raping a pig on national television. Anally, not that that even matters, but raping a pig on national television. That is the pilot episode in the series, which I think should not be minimized. That's what got this thing off the ground and headed into Season 4, someone coming up with a TV show where a white man rapes a pig on television. And they say, yes, that sounds great. Let's have more of these. That's what we're dealing with in the system of white supremacy. We'll be here Monday, Dr. Martin Kevorkian, looking forward to it. You can check out some of his previous visits in the program, including his most recent visit with us this past summer to talk about The Purge, to get a feel of the type of information that he might share with us Monday. If you have other comments you would like to share, feel free to dial in. You can email untiljustice@gmail.com. If you're looking for something in the archives, if you have guest suggestions, if you just have a problem or commentary you would like to share, gripe, complaint, drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. I also was reminded of 2 books, just with the whole black male privilege thing, when we had Becky Pettit on the program. Suspected Race Soldier, she wrote the book Invisible Men, Mass Incarceration, and the Myth of Black Progress. Dr. Curry recommended her work before, where she talks about how a lot of black males are excluded when we're doing all of this assessing of progress and how well or not so well black males have it, because so many of them are in confinement or various stages of the incarceration system, that a lot of those folks are discounted and or are homeless. So a lot of those folks, a lot of the black males specifically, are not even counted. That's one of the main premises in her book Invisible Men. And there was one of the books that touched on Donna Franklin. That was the book I was thinking of, where she was talking about what's love got to do with it. She was a guest on the program in the summer of 2013, where she talked about when you have a higher number of black females, or a growing greater percentage of black females who have great education, great incomes, more so than their black male counterparts, and that can make it more difficult for relationships. Again, whites are most to blame for all of that. You can go back in the archives to get more information on those 2 books, those 2 guests. With that, as I state consistently, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I'm sad that it was under those circumstances, but for the black mother who wrote to share that situation, she said sobriety would be best, and I don't even remember her mentioning how alcohol was a direct factor in her situation, but I co-signed completely. Even if everybody in that situation was sober, if we have black mothers out there listening to the program, which I know we do, if you imagine yourself in that situation with your children at the residence, if you're under the influence and you have to deal with that, even if I know we have black fathers as well, if you're listening to this, if you imagine that you're under the influence, do you think you're going to be able to deal with that situation constructively? If you're under the influence, do you think you'll do a better job resolving that situation with you, with a beer or a shot or a blunt? You think you'll do a better job handling that situation as opposed to you sober? Maybe so. I would submit that the evidence does not support that either. Sobriety would be best. Let's make sure that our behavior reflects that war is being waged against us at all times and that we take that seriously as attempted counter-racists. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm up. A victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.